Not those Lions. Three Lions we can get behind.
And he hoofed it.
There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course.
Just getting the head boxed off, should that just kind of happen.
For all your Lions coverage this summer, download the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
Good morning. You're welcome to OTB AM. We start this morning with an appeal. Have you seen our friend and colleague, Eoin Sheehan? Last seen at around about 6 o'clock yesterday evening outside Fitzgerald Stadium in Killarney, laughing in the face of a Cork supporter. Since then, unfortunately, details of Eoin's whereabouts are sketchy. From what we understand here on OTB AM, an emergency meeting of the Kerry Football Yarra Council was held last night. In attendance at this meeting, which was called by their honorary chairman, Tomás O'Shea, were Mark O'Shea, Dara O'Shea, Pat Spillane, Donaghy, and of course our very own, Eoin Sheehan. What does a meeting like that involve? Well, from what I can gather, they were addressed by Peter Keane, who said, lads, it's time for peak Yarra. So what we can expect over the coming days from the O'Shea's, from Sheehan, from Spillane, is peak Yarra. It'll start slowly. It'll probably start this morning with, Cork were no great shakes. They didn't really bring their best stuff. But over the coming weeks, you can expect them to really up the ante. Mark O'Shea will be on the last word with Matt Cooper, and he'll be saying, she's Matt, I think Clifford's a little bit off at one point in a Munster final. Not really what we'd expect from him. Maybe the hype's getting to him. Don't think Kerry can win an All-Ireland with Clifford in this sort of form. You can expect that coming your way from Mark O'Shea. We'll have Pat Spillane cutting across Corus Daunton again and again and again on the Sunday game, saying Kerry are still a team in transition. Sure, defensively, they're a shambles. And worst of all, over the coming days, you can expect Eoin Sheehan to come on OTB AM when we eventually find him and move Kerry down the power rankings. They're not going to number one. They're going below Mayo to number three. So if you see Eoin Sheehan this morning, and I'd say the Boar's Head area of Dublin is probably your best bet to have a look around, tell him, Eoin, this is a safe space for you. You are a friend. You are a colleague. You are welcome back. This is a safe space for Yarraism. Eoin, come home. We miss you. We love you. We want you and your Yarraism back soon. All right. So that is a very somber way to start OTB AM. No Eoin Sheehan. No Gerard Gilroy. But Tommy Rooney is here. Good morning, Tommy.
Nathan Murphy, good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. I watched back the Kerry Cork game last night because I was in Crow Park for Mayo Galway. Congratulations. Mayo have now won 48 Connacht titles.
Another Connacht title? Some of these lads, they don't even know how many Connacht medals they won.
Well, James Horan has won 6 as manager, which is pretty impressive. But I'll tell you what, I was just finishing up in Crow Park. I was chatting to Michael Meehan and the WhatsApp messages were coming through. I hadn't had a chance to flick on the Kerry Cork game and didn't look good. Did not look good for Kerry. And I know Cork had a good start for 10 minutes. I hope I'm not breaking privilege here, but I have a WhatsApp message from Eoin Sheehan at half time saying, Jesus, lads, that was tense. At half time saying, Jesus, lads, that was tense. Can you imagine how the Mayo people felt at half time? They're 5 points down to Galway. The Galway fans were loud. Mayo were rattled. And they came
out. Yeah, my text messages at halftime. My messages at halftime include the F word, many of them. But hey, Mayo, somebody started a little scrap. Somebody riled up Aidan O'Shea. And hey, the rest is history. Mayo back in an All-Ireland semi-final. What longevity this group have put together. 10 All-Ireland semi-finals in 11 years. Dub supporters, don't you at me. I don't care what happened after that right now. I am just pointing out that this group, for some of them, are playing in a 10th All-Ireland semi-final in 11 years. And standing in the way of another All-Ireland final, Dublin or the other team to have beaten them in recent years, Kildare.
Mm-hmm.
So Gilroy's off preparing for the Leinster final. So, it was a cracking weekend, yet again, of sport. If there was a lot of guilt, considering how brilliant the weather was, of sitting inside and watching this. But I'm sure a lot of people are getting into the Olympics. The news overnight, brilliant news. Mona McSharry is through to the final in the swimming. The first Irish swimmer in 25 years since you-know-who. to get to a Olympic final. It's an incredible achievement for Mona McSharry. It's been a mixed night overall. There was a lot of disappointment for the boxers, including Michaela Walsh, very early this morning. I'll be chatting about that as well. The Lions won. First test has gone to the Lions, which was massive as well. And obviously, well, what about, imagine being a Galway person this morning, Tommy. Imagine, like, it's bad enough at the best of times, but imagine being a Galway person this morning.
Knocked out of everything. Like, and to be fair to them, they put on an outrageous comeback in the hurling against Waterford. But how on earth did they let it slip so far? There were 16 points behind at one stage in that game. They brought it back to one. They're out of the hurling. They're out of the football. Like, for poor Joyce Nathan, I looked so good at times in that game. But we have to say, Mayo's gamesmanship, they've learned from the best. I know you're on holidays last week, but I spent a good portion of airtime last week talking about how Dublin, the only way they could beat Meath was little bits of gamesmanship in the second half. And we saw what
Tommy, they cut you off on the football pod with Paddy and Andy, rightly so. They cut you off because you were talking nonsense.
Three incidents in the Galway Mayo game yesterday. As Michael Meehan said, were they clumsy or were they coincidence? Now, I don't know. But three Galway players had to, well, two Galway players had to go off. And the star man, Shane Walsh, who was absolutely sensational in the first half, had to get an injection in his shoulder at halftime because he was slammed to the ground by a Mayo player.
It's senior football, Tommy. What do you want to do? They'd already literally given him a pat to goal, which he had taken advantage of. Do you want him to do it again and again and again? No, you got to lay down a marker.
No, I do understand that. But look, I think it has to be said, though, Mayo have to be commended for their gamesmanship, because we commend Dublin for doing it, for towing over the line and getting by. That's, you know, Owen and Jerry were saying last week, 100%. Look, we're going to get into Galway in the performance rankings, going to get into a bit of Kerry. Anything else from the Olympics? The boxers were unlucky again overnight. We had two more defeats in the boxing. Michaela Walsh lost.
The Olympics, it's been mixed for the Irish so far. And have you watched much of it?
Not a whole pile, to be honest, because I've been on the road a bit over the last couple of days. But I'm going to get into it properly now this week.
It is it's a brilliant thing on a Saturday, Sunday morning when you find yourself watching an hour and a half of skateboarding making its Olympics debut. One guy in the skateboarding had a full Phil Babb in the post.
Oh, no.
I mean, at full speed. It was horrific. Absolutely horrific. Now, there's been quite a few weird things happening at the Olympics. One of them yesterday was in the women's road race in the cycling, which was won by Anna Kaisenhofer, Austrian, rank outsider. Hasn't had a professional contract in 4 years. Nobody expected her to do anything. And she broke away early and she won by about 50 seconds and thought, wow, what a surprise that this rank outsider has won the cycling event. And then the next group, which contained most of the favourites, came through into their finish. And Annemiek van Vleuten, one of the hot favourites, crosses the line to win her silver medal and has the arms outstretched in full celebration in a way that you're thinking, it's great to win an Olympic silver medal. It's a massive achievement. But I would have thought, considering she was one of the favourites, that maybe there'd be a tinge of disappointment. You wouldn't be celebrating like you've just won the race. And it turned out, unfortunately, that van Vleuten thought she had won the race. Didn't realize that the Austrian cyclist had been part of an early breakaway that came back, but she didn't come back. And there's no radios, no team radios in Olympic cycling. So most of these riders are used to the longer events where your team will tell you there's a four-person breakaway and here's the gap. They didn't know that. So when they caught the breakaway group, for some reason, some of those within that following group didn't realize that Anna Kaisenhofer hadn't come back as well and basically was able to just cycle off and win. Now, Anna Kaisenhofer is a maths student, it seems, a PhD in maths, and this was part of her game plan, apparently, was to go early, that she had figured out that actually one of the best ways of going in the searing heat over in Japan was to try this, and it worked out. But there is some, well, heartbreaking footage of Van Vleuten as she finds out that
poor Van Vleuten,
she didn't actually win gold. And while she's doing some of her post-race interviews, other competitors are congratulating on her winning gold because they didn't realize either that Kaisenhofer had stormed out in front. So that was interesting yesterday morning. These are things you just stumble upon now at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's going to take over your life for the next couple of weeks. Last night then, the men's triathlon was on. It started about 10:30. It's so hot, they had to start at 6:30 in the morning over in Tokyo because they're in, what, once you get into daytime hours, well into the 30s. So they're lined up for the start of the men's triathlon, and the buzzer goes, but there's a boat right in front of half the triathletes. So half them dive in to start. The other half are there. There's a boat which is carrying the cameramen. They have to stop. Two or three of them dive in nearly under the boat, which has massive propellers, an engine at the back of it. And yeah, they have a false start. The rest of them only went about 150 meters. I'm not sure what impact it had on the results.
That must have an impact, though.
Results.
That must completely throw you.
Oh, well, even then, when they got the race underway, the guy who was driving this boat was right on top, getting as close as you possibly can to them to get the best camera angle. I'm like, get the hell out of the way.
Yeah.
So they're kind of a couple of the quirkier moments from the Olympics so far. But it's sitting down watching the volleyball for a couple of hours, a bit of basketball, the French beating the USA yesterday. There's been a lot going on. And obviously, mixed for the Irish so far. But the fact that Mona McSherry's got through to the final is a heck of an achievement. So we're going to be talking a lot more about all of that. OTB AM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. So here's what we have coming up over the next little while. Tommy is with us for the performance rankings. What'll be in the red? What'll be in the orange? What'll be in the green? Where will the green and red fit into all of that as well? So that's coming up in just a moment. Paddy Andrews is going to be with us as well to reflect on those big wins for Mayo and Kerry yesterday. Maybe give us a bit of insight into how the Dubs are feeling ahead of Sunday's Leinster football final. At 8:30, we will hear from our own Ronan Mullen, who's been up pretty much all night watching the Irish boxers in action at the Olympics, and give us his thoughts on what's been a disappointing start for the Irish boxers so far. Sarah O'Donovan with us then at 8:45. The draw for the quarterfinals of the Hurling Championship, Dublin and Tipperary in there now as well for those quarterfinals draw with Waterford and Cork. That's happened about 8:30. So Sarah will join us just after that to look back on the weekend's qualifiers and also the latest in the Camogie Championship. Phil Egan with us just after 9:00. He'll run through everything that has happened in the Olympics overnight. And then Alan Quinlan reflecting on that first test win for the Lions. Warren Gatland, it turns out, is an absolute genius. So the papers to come from 9:30 as well. Do get in touch, as always, on all our social channels here on OTBEM. But right now, it is time to get into Monday's performance rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances just lacked that intensity.
So every Monday morning on OTBM, we give you the chance to win a Gillette starter pack. All you have to do is tell us who should make the cut for our Gillette performance ranking. Send in your suggestions on Twitter, Instagram, or comment wherever you're watching. We will pick a winner a little bit later on in the show. So with Old Sheehan missing in action, Tommy Rooney is stepping into the breach for this week's performance rankings. What's going to be in the red? What's going to be in the orange? What is going to be in the green? Tommy.
Well, Nathan, you stole my thunder at the top of the show, because we're starting with the red and we've got the Kerry Mafia up front. Now, the Kerry Mafia is an all-encompassing phrase. It captures Owen Sheehan's WhatsApp group with all of his mates from Kerry, where they wind each other up every week and they get each other, you know, all ready and all on the same page about what they're going to say. And it also includes, as you mentioned, Tomás O'Shea, Pat Spillane, Darragh O'Shea, Mark O'Shea, Owen Sheehan, and any other Kerry voice in the media that's out there. Now, they'd had a good run of it for the last couple of weeks. Do you know? They had plenty to talk about with Dublin. Asher Cluxon's coming back, or he's not coming back. Or Cluxon's going to be one to crack the Dubs. And I'll be honest with you, sitting in Croke Park with Paddy Andrews last week, he refused to read Tomás O'Shea's column. He knew what the Kerry boys were at. He knew what they were doing. They were starting. And all week we had to listen to Owen Sheehan say, Cork are going to give us a good run of it. Cork are going to make it a close game. In our quick picks on Friday, I'm fairly sure Owen had a 2 or 3 point win for Kerry. I went for 10 and I got laughed out of it. Everyone else had believed it. Will and Adrian went closer to 2 or 3 as well. So look it, all week long, it was going perfectly for them. They talked Cork down. Sure, didn't Mark Keane beat us on his own last week or last year? Do you know what, Nathan? The only provincial final that wasn't in Croke Park, the Munster final. Peter Keane had his eyes on Cork and only Cork. They were giving them the respect they deserved. And I think we've got a tweet here from 4:20. Jojo, you might be able to throw it up. Owen Sheehan, at 20 past four, 20 minutes into the game. Sure, Kerry people were being disingenuous by calling a narrow win, weren't they? Cork are a brilliant team. What happens between the first water break and the next water break? Over the next 40 minutes, at that stage, Cork led by 6 points. Over the next 40 minutes, Kerry outscored them by 22 points, 4-11 to just 1 point. This was the ultimate Yerra. And it's possibly, quite possibly, the last Yerra that any Kerry person can make for the rest of the year, because they are the form team in the championship. Make no mistake about it, the Dubs are rattled. I saw it with my own eyes. I watched it last week. I watched a Meade man shoulder a Dub for the first time in 10 years. I watched turnover after turnover in the third quarter of that game as Meade outscored Dublin by 1-6 to 2 points. The last team to do that to Dublin, Nathan, Mayo in 2015 in the All-Ireland semi-final when they were 7 points down and they came back. Dublin aren't Dublin anymore, and Kerry are coming. Forget about David Clifford not scoring a point yesterday. It doesn't matter. Paul Gainey's going to score 2 goals. Sean O'Shea is going to stand up. Paddy Clifford is there. Another Clifford, man of the match yesterday. So Kerry are here, and Kerry are here to stay. Do you know, how many All-Irelands are going to win in a row, Nathan? What are you saying at this stage? Are you saying three? Are you saying four? Because at this stage, they're going to get by Monaghan Tyrone. A Tyrone team that they put 6 goals by 6 weeks ago, and a Monaghan team that they have never, ever beaten in the championship. And after watching Mayo 4 times this year, I'm backing your boys in the All-Ireland semi-final. And then I think Kerry is going to break their hearts in the All-Ireland final. That's the way it's going to go.
You're backing Mayo to beat Dublin?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that for this morning, I'm saying that. But there is a chance.
For effect. You see,
There is going to be a game there.
I'd go along with the errorism in that. I think never has a team been as talked up while achieving so little as this current Kerry group.
Mm.
Go and do it. Come back to me when you've won in All-Ireland. And also, the disrespect for this great Dublin side. Out of everybody. Everybody. They still... Meade never looked like beating them. You landed a shoulder on them. You need to land more than a shoulder. You're talking about 2015 for the first time since Mayo since 2015. Dublin won the All-Ireland in 2015. Doesn't matter how you win All-Ireland. You don't need to win every All-Ireland by 15 points to prove that you should split Dublin. Dublin win the All-Ireland by a point. It's still 7 All-Irelands in a row. It's still one of the greatest achievements there's ever been. So I don't understand this talking down of Dublin from everybody at all. They're just biding their time.
Mayo men can't Yerra.
No, but listen, by the time it comes to the All-Ireland semi-final, I will be predicting a Mayo win. Don't you worry, Tommy.
Yeah,
and we're the anti-era.
We'll get into Mayo in a couple of minutes' time, and we'll be talking to Paddy Andrews about it as well. But look, it remains to be seen whether Owen Sheehan will move the dial enough to put Kerry into first place. There's a serious amount of pressure on him. Can you imagine the amount of pressure of a whole county, and a county like Kerry? I can't even remember what Paddy called them, but Owen Sheehan could be calling them the same thing. If he manages to put them into first place, because they'll all turn on him. They really will. And I don't know whether it's the right thing or not to put them into first place, but they've been absolutely unbelievable so far this year. They've been absolutely exceptional. Do you know? They've destroyed Galway. They've destroyed Tyrone. Scored 118 on Dublin. They absolutely destroyed Cork. Like, what did Mayo beat Leitrim by? Was it 24 points? Like, they beat Cork by 22 points yesterday. That should not be happening. Shouldn't be happening in a provincial final.
But it's not a shock, is it?
I didn't think it was that much of a shock. Now, you know, the heat may have played a part. You know, Cork obviously had a brilliant start. But Kerry's firepower is just something else. And I think the way Peter Keane has them set up, they learned their lessons from last year. And they're an awesome unit this year. I was being a little bit disingenuous there about Dublin at the start. I was getting a bit excited. You're right. But Nathan, they have lost 80 All-Ireland medals in the last 18 months. And about 20 odd of them have gone in the last, about 30 have gone in the last 4 weeks, with Keane O'Sullivan, Kevin McMinniman going to Tokyo, Cluxton not returning, and Eric Lowndes walking out of the panel. So they're under pressure, but as Andy Moran and Paddy Andrews said last week, if John Small and Owen Murch comes back, it's a different story. I don't know if Killian O'Connor is going to be back from Mayo. I asked James Horan, and he looked at me with, you know, as if I had two heads, as if I didn't understand what a ruptured Achilles was. So maybe there's no chance in hell that Killian O'Connor is going to be back. But yeah. Will we get on to the next county?
Let's give as much time for this one as possible, Tommy.
County Galway are in the red. What a horrendous weekend for Galway. Just brutal. Do you know, there were strong favourites against Waterford. It was 5 or 6 points was the odds going into this game, was the handicap going into the game. Waterford had nearly been put out by Laois last week. I know that Clare were actually hoping to get Galway because, you know, they knew what was coming with Cork. And they just weren't good enough. Like Joe, they have Joe Canning there. Thank God Joe won his All-Ireland a couple of years ago, because you know he's getting towards the end now, and he's after overtaking Shefflin in the all-time scoring charts. And I'm not sure, like, we're going to play a bit of James Gale later on talking about retirements. It's hard to know whether Joe Canning has another 2 or 3 years left on him. He may have one more year. And then in the football,
he's nearly 33. He's nearly 33, Joe Canning, just on that, because it was interesting. Scahill was saying there'll be a big fallout from that Galway hurling defeat, and there'll be retirements, and maybe Joe will start wondering about his own position. He's 33 soon. Mm. And then Ollie was on the Sky coverage saying something similar, not sure how much longer that Joe's going to be around for, which gives a sense that maybe conversations have been going on in the background. I don't know. Yeah. It's going to be very hard for Joe Canning to walk away. I know he bided his time in coming into intercounty hurling and did it on his own terms, and maybe he'll go out on his own terms as well. But when you're of that importance, it's not as if there is a conveyor belt of talent coming in behind him ready to step in, that there'll be enormous pressure on him to keep going for as long as he can. But that is a disaster. Whatever about the final result and the comeback and forwards last club, to find yourself 16 points down.
Yeah.
There's got to be a fallout from that.
Yeah, it was a bizarre performance and a bizarre result, we'll say. And we'll wait and see who Dublin and Tipperary pick up in the All-Ireland quarterfinals. But I'd imagine they don't want to face Cork. And like that Waterford team, while it was a great performance, to let that 16-point lead nearly slip was quite alarming as well. So look, for Galway, a terrible weekend. If Joe Canning goes, it's going to be even worse. But in the football, Nathan, like, it was a brilliant game of football. Now, I've had the pleasure of going to a couple of games this year, but this was the first match I've been at that was really properly competitive, that we knew was going to be a good game going into it. We got about 15 minutes of Meath in Dublin and that was it. We got about 10 minutes in Clare and Mayo, and that was all we really got of being competitive in the league semi-final. But in this game, right from the first second, before the ball was thrown in, Padraig O'Hara was smashing Rob Finnerty's shoulders in the corner of the pitch. Sean Kelly was in the throw-in on Aidan O'Shea. Immediately you were looking and scanning to see who was picking up Shane Walsh, where was Paddy Durkin, who was picking up Comer, where was Lee Keegan. You knew the matchups were going to matter. And for the first 35 minutes of this game, 40 minutes we'll say with the injury time in the first half, it was an absolute battle. And Galway were on top. They really were. Like that goal in the first half, the first goal, never mind the second one, but the first goal, when Paul Connery hits that ball, Shane Walsh is 40 yards from goal. How on earth is he the first man to react? It's absolutely ridiculous how that ball just fell to him. Now, we saw Jeremy O'Connor in the second half try a volley as the ball dropped to him. As the ball was falling to Shane Walsh, I was thinking, don't shoot.
Hit it.
Don't hit it. Because if anyone was able to do it like that, and Michael Meehan sitting beside me, who had scored a goal from the ground from a free beforehand from that distance, you were just thinking that if anyone could do it, Walsh could do it. But he picked it up and he absolutely buried it by Henley. 5 minutes later, he'd taken on three Mayo defenders on the sideline. It was slightly reminiscent of Daniel Flynn's run for Kildare against Dublin a couple of years ago. I don't know if you remember that, where he bombed down the side of the Hogan, cut inside and put a ball over the outside of his right boot. Walsh cuts in, beats O'Shea, beats Keegan. There's another Mayo defender there that I can't remember. He may have taken steps, lays on a platter for Damien Comer. Bang! Mayo were 6 points down. They didn't score in the second quarter until the 32nd minute that Darren McHale scored a point. Now, I was quite perplexed before the game. I was convinced that James Horne would be making changes to his starting 15. I wasn't convinced that Jeremy O'Connor would have the legs to start, and I thought he might have found a way to get Owen McLaughlin in there. He brings on Owen McLaughlin and Kevin McLaughlin at halftime. It just gave them the legs. Galway had lost Sean Kelly after an innocuous clash, maybe a minute or two before he pulled his hamstring, and Rob Finnerty, one of their sharpest scorers, a Mayo son, we'll say, in the first half as well, after an innocuous clash with Padraig O'Hara as he ran across the square. And also, after Shane Walsh set up that goal, and you can see the replay in the background, it's Lee Keegan who slams him to the ground when he's running by him. So Walsh had to get a shoulder injection at halftime. Now, Lee Keegan is one of the best man markers in the game. I've seen Paul Flynn come on in an All-Ireland semi-final. I can't remember if it was an All-Ireland final or All-Ireland semi-final. At halftime, Mayo, he couldn't get to the pace of the game. He come on and Keegan is rifling him shoulders and hitting him boxes the second he comes in. Flynn just couldn't get to the pace of the game. So when you're going up against Lee Keegan and you skin him once, you're not going to skin him again. And that's what happened to Shane Walsh in that game.
Was it that Padraig O'Hara who nailed him?
Nailed Walsh in the first half. No, it was Lee Keegan. Okay. It was Lee Keegan who was standing to the ground. So, well, unless my Zoom capabilities on the video replay was wrong, but it looked like Lee Keegan. So If I've missed that,
wild accusation to Lee Keegan against one of Mayo's greatest ever people, a man pushing for the Mayo Mount Rushmore. But listen, if you want to throw around those wild accusations here, you were in Croke Park. What was the good word? What happened in the tunnel? Because, again, talking about the good people of Mayo, outrageous accusation by Joanne Cantwell that Mayo back in Croke Park, second consecutive game, there's a scrap in the tunnel. Not that, you know, you could put the two of them together. Listen, the Dubs were up to something dirty. We know that in the All-Ireland final last year. God knows what the Galway players were trying this time. What happened?
Having a clue. I asked James Horne about it. He obviously didn't tell me. He said
Gave me the look again.
Gave me the look again, as if I had two heads, as I said. But Aidan O'Shea, something must have been said to Aidan O'Shea. Something must have been said. Because Aidan O'Shea came out a different man in that second half. And I actually watched the game back last night. When you watch it back, you can really see the impact that O'Shea had, because it's hard to see it when you're trying to follow a game and take notes and stuff like that. But O'Shea had a serious amount of turnovers. But he was playing so deep in that first half. So deep. He had a brilliant turnover on Shane Walsh at one stage. Sent Tommy Conroy away. Conroy should have taken his point. Tried to make a goal and got done for overcarrying. Just before halftime, I'm sure you remember it, O'Shea fields that a huge ball inside in the square. He gets bottled up, free out. Start of the second half, bang, ball into O'Shea. He fields it, flicks it, I think, to Paddy Durkin. Fouled, penalty, game on. And Mayo never lost control after that. So O'Shea's role, going in and out, defining the balance right. I think he needs to be kind of moved in and out. So look, that's kind of where we're at with that. I'm going to move on to the Olympics very quickly because we only have a couple of minutes left here. And I've put Irish Olympians in the orange. And, you know, we were talking about the great achievement of Mona McSherry earlier on today. But just to start off, first off, to become an Olympian, to go to the Olympics is obviously a huge achievement. So you've obviously won to get there. But to lose so early is just heartbreaking. So for the likes of Jack Woolley, for Emmett Brennan, for Brendan Irvine and Michaela Walsh this morning, like, to get there, it's huge. And just, you know, I know the likes of Irvine and Emma Brennan, they were underdogs going into their fights. In these games, when you can't have the crack of the Olympic Village, when there's a pandemic going on and you're not getting to taste the full atmosphere and all of that, it just must be even worse. Do you know, I just feel for them that, you know, you're over there now and they're probably going to have to go home in the next day or two. And
yeah,
I can't
like imagine it is a reminder atmosphere. That like there is no tomorrow for these athletes when it comes to an Olympics. On the main Olympic sports. It's why, as brilliant as it would be to see Shane Lowry or Rory McIlroy or Leona Maguire or Stephanie Meadow win a medal, it's not the be-all and end-all of their season even, never mind their entire career. Whereas Jack Woolley now has to wait 4 years and think about that fight again and again and again and go through it in his head and wait for another opportunity and hope to Christ he doesn't get injured over the next 4 years or something doesn't go wrong. Yeah. And likewise with Emma Brennan and the emotion in their interviews of, I think as well, of not having their family and friends there and having to go back probably to a hotel room by themselves and not have that embrace of, you know, somebody quickly to say, you know, we are proud of you. Like, you have achieved a hell of a lot to even get to this stage. But as you say, to be there in this incredibly just sanitized situation, not allowed really any interaction outside of Team Ireland. And he's like, For someone like Jack Woolley, while he wouldn't want to admit it and he would wanted to have, you know, he knew his Olympics was going to be over after the first weekend pretty much either way because of the way the Taekwondo was set up. Yeah. He would have had 2 weeks having a very, very good time at the Olympic Village. Instead, they have to get out of Tokyo within 48 hours, back home to Dublin, and now he's going to spend the next 2 weeks sitting watching it. So it is devastating for those athletes. And
it is.
Listen, it's been a mixed start.
And look, you'll be talking about Emma Brennan's story we're running a little later. And, you know, Kelly Harrington is still to fight. And we have Kurt Walker, who won, obviously, the only Irish boxer to win so far. But like Brennan's story, that's somebody who took out a loan, who had his family backing him over the last 4 years. He nearly left the sport, but he got to the Olympics. Like, he's an Irish Olympian. So you'll hear a bit more from Ronan about that. Congrats to Rhys McLenaghan, who's made it through to the Pommel Horse Final. The first Irish gymnast to do so. And obviously Mona McSherry, the 20-year-old Sligo native. Like, she shaved, was it 0.3 seconds? Oh, sorry, she was 0.3 seconds short of her personal best. Like, a sensational performance. She's turned up and she's in the final. It's tomorrow morning, 3:15 a.m. Set the alarms and get up and watch it. We'll have reaction live on OTBM tomorrow morning. But like, that is a massive final. As you said, the first time an Irish swimmer has been in an Olympics final since 1996.
Just when you think things can't get any worse for Tokyo, there's a typhoon on the way as well. So the rowing has been pushed back for a couple of days.
And we've had some good performances in the rowing so far. And Annalise Murphy's in action as well again. So,
well, Annalise, I think, is hoping for the typhoon because Annalise performs far better the windier it is. And it's been incredibly flat calm for the first couple of days, which is why she's probably had a slow start yesterday. So Annalise wants the wind to blow, and but not to blow strong enough that it's called off. As you said, Monomach Sherry 3:15. People are just figuring out the timings around the Olympics. So if you're up around 8 o'clock, you'll still get a good 5-6 hours in of Olympic goodness. And actually tonight, I mentioned the men's triathlon. Tonight at 10:30, Carolyn Hayes is in the women's triathlon. Interviewed her a couple of weeks ago. Incredibly likable. I'll put it up online. You should watch it. You will want her to do well. She's been in bracken form as well. And that's on tonight at 10:30. So you can actually stay up and it'll be over by about midnight. So that is well worth watching. Into the green, Tommy. You've left yourself with barely any time to just praise the brilliance of Mayo.
Very little time. But we've been talking Mayo already. So first real test of 2021. Passed. They needed that. You know, they've put 20 points up in every game so far. They've scored minimum 20 points. They've hammered Leitrim, they've hammered Sligo. They breezed through the Division 2 campaign. We didn't really know what Tommy Conroy and Ryan O'Donoghue were made of. Conroy didn't have a great first half, but he was awesome in the second half. I don't know whether James Horan, you know, riled him in a half time or whatever he said to him, but Conroy was exceptional in the second half. Ryan O'Donoghue had a really good game. Oshie Mullum was awesome as always. Padraig O'Hara stood up, so hopefully, I think it's a rib injury that he got. Hopefully he's fine. So a good first quarter, a crap second quarter, a sensational third quarter, and a really impressive fourth quarter as well. So Mayo, James Horan, sixth Mayo title, congratulations. You're on to the All-Ireland semi-final against either Dublin or Kildare, so we'll see what happens. Number one. Now, obviously, I could have put in any of the Olympic stories. I could have put in the Lions. I know you're going to be talking about it with Alan Quinlan a little later after they won the first test against South Africa. Could have put in Cork, hurling, but, you know, with the football, I kind of decided to leave off the County of Cork altogether. Paul McShane is number one in green. What a remarkable story this is, right? McShane has been re-signed by Manchester United. You know, he came through
as a player, should we point it out?
Not as a player, he's been re-signed.
But as a player as well.
He's been re-signed by Manchester United as a player. So I think it's 16, 17 years since he's had a Manchester United jersey on. He never played a first-team game for the club. He was sent out on loan a couple of times and he obviously moved on. He probably moved on in and around his Ireland debut where he marked, was it Jan Koller that day against the Czech Republic in his first game for Ireland? So McShane is back at Manchester United. So they've re-signed him as a player coach to work with the under-23s. So he's going to be working with bringing through younger players. There's a extremely talented under-23 group there in Manchester United, and he's going to be playing alongside them. He's going to be coaching them. So he's clearly a very highly regarded coach. He's done his badges. It's fantastic to see. It's massive. So he's clearly highly regarded in coaching circles of Manchester United, bringing him back. And also just to note that Brian Barry Murphy, Nathan, you've spoken to this man a couple of times in the show, the son of a Cork legend, Rochdale manager, but they've released him from his contract. They've agreed to let him go because Manchester City have hired him now as the lead coach of City's development squad. So that's two unbelievable moves for two former Irish footballers. So Manchester United fans, forget about the fact that Paul Pogba and Mino Raiola are him and hawing about staying or whether they're going to go or not. Maka is back.
Ripping his heart out to be back at Manchester United. I'm delighted for Brian Barry Murphy as well. As you mentioned, he was on the show about a month ago. And funny enough, he had Gavin Bazunu, obviously, at Rochdale last year on loan from Manchester City. And has had a few City players. So they obviously trusted him. And even talking to him that night, you could tell he was probably better suited to that sort of role than maybe actual management. While he found himself as Rochdale manager, you could tell he loved the player development side of it. He loved working with young players. He got enormous satisfaction from seeing players actually improve. Whereas I think he found difficult that the results-based business that they're in, Rochdale were relegated last season, that, you know, he can point out and say, well, we have progressed this way. And if you're losing matches, nobody really cares. So it's a big, big job. And Manchester City take their development incredibly seriously because, well, not many of them go on to play for Manchester City. They do look to sell these players for 10, 15, 20 million euro. So they need to get that job right. And as you say, for Paul McShane as well. And a lot of Irish, former players involved in key roles at underage level. Gary Dicker's just got the exact same job at Brighton with their academy, which is an incredibly highly rated academy as well. So hopefully at some stage we see these coaches come back into the Irish underage system as well. But that is Tommy Rooney's performance rankings. We don't need Sheehan back, Tommy. You can stay. You can stay. That was top quality Thank stuff. You. And listen, you put Mayo in the green, which is the key thing. Mm. But we want your shouts as well. For the performance rankings, we want you to let us know what the performance ranking should be. Just get in touch on any of our social channels and we will announce the winner live on the show at 9:30.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
So, an absolutely packed show still to come on OTBAM. There's Lines with Alan Quinlan after 9 o'clock. We'll bring you the latest from the Olympics, boxing with Ronan Mullen and hurling with Sarah O'Donovan. But we're back right after these. Talking Gaelic football with Paddy Andrews.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
All right, you're welcome back. You're very welcome back to OTB AM. Nathan with you this morning. Get in touch on any of our social channels. As we said, busy show ahead. But Paddy Andrews is with us on the line from the Football Pod with Paddy and Andy. How are you getting, Paddy?
Good, Nathan. How are you?
I'm not too bad. So Mayo through to the All-Ireland semi-finals once again. Kerry are there also. We might start in Kerry first. 422-19. 22-point gap between themselves and Cork, their biggest ever win over Cork in a Munster final. A quarter of the way into the game, it looked as though it was going to be a hell of a lot tighter than that. What changed for Kerry a quarter of the way into that game that they ran out such convincing winners?
Yeah, that was a surprising thing, I suppose. Look, we touched it on last week's pod. Like, we expect Kerry to win this game comfortably. There was obviously, mentally, there was a big challenge for them after slipping up last year against Cork, and you could see the intensity and the hunger they played with throughout the season to get a shot at Cork and get that Munster title back. But you're right, the first quarter was anything but what we expected. Cork got off to a flyer. And I suppose if you're an opponent looking at Kerry, people are going to look and go, what did Cork do in that first quarter that caused them trouble? And Brian Hurley was causing Jason Foley all sorts of problems, and Jason Foley's been probably one of Kerry's best defenders to date. They were struggling there. They had a couple of goal chances, which, look, all season they've been so, so clinical with Sean O'Shea, and God forbid, David Clifford for once was kind of off, and you thought, is this another upset? Surely not, that they're not going to slip up again. But what they did over the next 45 minutes was, and to be honest, quite similar to what we've seen in the previous game with Mayo and Galway. They just completely dominated Cork from that point on. They pushed up. Cork's kickouts, I thought, were an issue all day with Micheál Martin and then Mark White in the second half. Kerry, you could see, they had four guys in the full forward line, four guys in the half forward line. They were going after the Cork kickout, and that was the real base for them. And then all of a sudden, Sean O'Shea starts to kick into gear. Paddy Clifford had another massive game for Kerry. He's been a real, real standout all through the National League. And even with David Clifford being a little bit off for probably the first time in God knows how long, I just think their athleticism, their energy, and like I said, once their forward unit started kicking into gear, they completely blew Cork away over that second half. And again, it's another warning from Kerry, and they've put out a few of them over the last 2 or 3 weeks. So look, they looked really impressive, but Cork, despite a pretty decent opening quarter, they just completely ran out of steam, and they were just shut down all over the pitch in the second half.
It's interesting you mentioned running out of steam, because in all the Kerry post-match interviews that I've been listening to, they've mentioned their fitness and how even talking ahead of the game to put the trust in their fitness and the work that they have done over the last few months, that they sensed actually that they were a far fitter team than Cork, which is a lot of confidence on something that's quite difficult to know until you're actually out in that real hot day in Fitzgerald Stadium. Do you look at this Kerry team and actually think they are a lot fitter than where they were 12 months ago?
I think you can definitely see it in their conditioning. You look at the body shape of some of the players over the lockdown, like you say, Clifford, Sean O'Shea and these guys, Tom O'Sullivan, they've come back, they're a hell of a lot stronger. And you can definitely see it in the style they play. You look at the last 20 minutes, and to be fair, this was the bench coming in as well, guys like Killian Spillane, Adrian Spillane, Tommy Walsh. Kerry were 75 minutes on the clock. They were still bursting forward. They were just taking the ball off Cork and then attacking in waves. And I think you're going to see this over the next couple of weeks when you get down to the real top teams in the All-Ireland semi-finals. The athleticism these teams have and the conditioning that they have in the bank. We've seen it with Tyrone beating Donegal last week. Now, I know Donegal were down to 14 men, but Tyrone ran them off the pitch. Donegal were out on their feet. We've seen it in Croke Park yesterday. like Mayo, from an athletic point of view, completely overran Galway. And the same with Kerry doing at the Cork yesterday. If you're going to be one of the top contenders and you're going to get into Croke Park and you're going to beat the likes of Dublin, you have to have serious athleticism all over the pitch. And without a doubt, you can see Kerry have improved in that regard, 100%.
I'd say there's a lot of people with Footballer of the Year betting slips that are maybe trying to change the D into a P, Clifford, because Paddy has been unbelievable this season. We get on to David and maybe why he had one of his quieter days, but like so much of the focus on Kerry attack-wise has been focused on David Clifford and Shaunie O'Shea. Like Paddy Clifford seems to have brought a bit of a dog to that forward line as well.
Oh, without a doubt. It's his game awareness, his intelligence on the ball. He just seems to make the right decision all the time. And the possession counts he gets, he's just a huge link player for Kerry. And we touched on it the very first pod we did at start here. We're asking, you know, why did Kerry underperform against Cork last year and what areas did they need to improve in for the season? And was finding balance in that forward line and not just relying on David Clifford magic or Shaun O'Shea magic. Yes, of course, those two players can do that, but they needed guys like Darren Moyne has been injured the last couple of weeks. But he was providing. But Paddy Clifford has been a huge, huge find from this year. He kicks two or three scores himself every game, but it's just his movement, his energy on the ball. He allows Kerry to transition the ball up the pitch really quickly, whether it's him carrying it himself or he's receiving kick passes from the half-back line or from David Moran. He's just integral to what they do. And if you're looking with a lens, I suppose, into an All-Ireland semi-final, I expect Tyrone to win on Saturday and win the Ulster Championship and play Kerry in a semi-final. Teams are going to have to start man-marking Paddy Clifford. The obvious one is trying to shut down Clifford, and look, it was incredible what Sean Meehan did yesterday under serious pressure. But like, you got to have a plan for Paddy Clifford because he is the glue that he's providing the bullets to two guys inside.
Yeah.
Each game, he just seems to improve more and more and more. And you're right, he's absolutely one of the key players for Kerry in everything good they've done so far this season.
It's a lot of players you're looking at man-marking, though, now if you're going up against this Kerry forward line, because obviously you're going to have at least one on David Clifford. Like, it felt as though maybe Cork, in a way, yesterday wasted Sean Powder by having him on Shaun O'Shea. You need to manage Shaun O'Shea and the two Cliffords. There's not many defences who can do that and keep on top of everyone else.
And look, that's the challenge, and that's why, like I say, Kerry were, in my opinion, were overly reliant on Clifford as it was. Bear in mind, Paul Geaney was a lot sharper yesterday, got back on the score sheet. I know he's been playing a little bit further out the pitch, but look, we had the luxury, I suppose, with Dublin for years that you want to have four or five forwards that can be matchmakers. And that's, Kerry have developed that. And like I say, you've guys coming in off the bench so hungry. Like, Killian Spillane comes on and he's getting a diving block in his own 13-yard line. Like, you can just see these guys are hungry for game time. They were hurt by last year as well. And look, for me, they've been unbelievably impressive throughout the National League and what they've done in the Munster Championship so far. And look, that's the challenge for teams. If you're going to win the All-Ireland, and if you're Mayo or Tyrone or Kildare at the weekend, and you're trying to take out one of the big teams, you need to be able to deal with four or five really dangerous forwards. And you're right, not many teams can. Not many teams can do that. And that's why Kerry are, they're right up there, you know, as one of the favourites for this year's All-Ireland. There's no doubt about that.
Was that ruthlessness that we saw from Kerry yesterday reminiscent of Dublin in recent times?
Look, I think it was. Once they got a sense in the second half, they just obliterated them. And you could definitely sense, look, Kerry were fuming what happened last year. They never should have lost that game to Cork. There was a bit of complacency from the coaches in terms of their team selection, from the players themselves on the pitch. They wasted a year, really. You know, they should never have been in a position to lose that game to Cork last year. And what they've done so far this season, you can see it. You can see it in their energy. You see it when they score goals and they're out there celebrating. You see it in their intensity when they're trying to chase down guys and win kickouts. There's a real, real hunger for that Kerry team. And to be honest, there should be. Of course there should be. They haven't won in All-Ireland. They were very close in 19. They blew it last year. You get the sense that there's real unfinished business. And, you know, Peter Keane's been there a couple of years now. Guys like Clifford and Shaun O'Shea, they've developed into the leaders in that team. They are desperate to win in All-Ireland. And you could see it in the way they play, the way they defended yesterday, top Ryan O'Buglock. Did a brilliant job. He just completely shut down Brian Hurley, who was causing trouble. And there are probably question marks you would have had with Kerry. You know, if you're looking, where's the weakness? Possibly in the full back line and definitely in the first quarter, you got a sense of that. But you can see in their attitude, like you say, their intensity, their physicality, their athleticism, matched with the quality of players they have. Look, without a doubt, they're up there, right up there with Dublin, I'd say, as favourites for All-Ireland. And everyone knows that. They're proving it every time they go out on the pitch.
David Clifford's performance then yesterday ends up with just the 1 point, but like, was involved throughout the game and was such an important link player for Kerry. But is there anything that defenders, the Tyrone defenders, Dublin Mayo defenders can learn from what Sean Meehan did yesterday and his performance on David Clifford?
No, look, it's one of those days for David Clifford. Like I say, he had a goal chance that you would have put your house on him at the beginning. He kind of shoot straight at Micheál Martin. You could see probably in the second half, he was frustrated himself. You could see Kerry are racking up big scores and the ball just wasn't dropping for him. He just turned over a couple of times. He had a couple of opportunities, but that was just one of those days. And I suppose the hope for all the other teams is that it can happen, because it's so rare to see that. Even David Clifford on a bad day, you'd still expect him to score 4 or 5 points from play. So I wouldn't be reading too much into that. That was just, you wouldn't be surprised he went out in All-Ireland semi-final and scored 1-6 or 1-7, you know. So it was just one of those days, but fair play to Sean Meehan, because it was a brilliant performance by him. Like I say, when Cork were being overrun all over the pitch, his head didn't drop and, you know, he did a fantastic job, so that should be noted. But for Clifford, look, he'll dust himself off. Just one of those days at the office, I would not be worried about him whatsoever in terms of his form going into an All-Ireland semi-final.
All right, so it'll be Tyrone or Monaghan for Kerry in that All-Ireland semi-final. In the other semi-final, it'll be Mayo against either Dublin or Kildare. This was a heck of a turnaround for Mayo, who looked like a bit of a busted flush at halftime. There were no signs that this second-half performance was coming. Was this a resurgent Mayo, or was it a Galway collapse?
I give huge credit to Mayo. I think that second-half performance was everything good you'd expect from the James Horan Mayo team over the past decade. We're talking about Kerry's athleticism. Mayo just completely, they smothered Galway. They bullied them off the pitch in the second half. And you're right, in the first half, the worry you had for Mayo without Killian O'Connor was that, are they going to be able to score enough against the top teams? Like, their first two games of the championship were not events. This was their first proper test. And you got the sense that they were struggling for leadership up front. You know, there were a couple of bad wides. Tommy Conroy, Ryan O'Donoghue, even Lee Keegan and guys like that, experienced players. And that's the accusation you'd have against Mayo, particularly without Killian O'Connor, is can they score against the top teams? Are they going to be able to get enough on the board? And on the flip side, Shane Walsh was kicking into gear for Galway, and he's so important for them. We touched on it last week, talking about Daniel Flynn and what he does for Kildare. There are certain players that just have X factor, and Shane Walsh has that. He turns it on, scores a goal himself, and has a brilliant, like, he burns Paddy Durkin for the second goal for Damien Comer. Not many players can do that, and at that point, you're right, Mayo are 5 points down, and you're thinking, is this the end of the road for them? But their second half performance was everything you'd expect from Mayo at their best. Their athleticism all over the pitch. They just steamrolled Galway. Owen and Kevin McLaughlin coming on. Matthew O'Rahan put in one of the best performances from midfielder I've seen in a long, long time. And to be fair, Pádraig Joyce's comments after the game, like, he knew what to expect. You know, and from our experience of playing against Mayo with Dublin, you have to match their runners from deep. If you let them get ahead of steam up, and they've runners like Oisin Mullen, Lee Keegan and these guys, Matthew O'Rahan coming from deep, you have to be able to stop them. And Galway just could not live with that in the second half. It was a complete obliteration. Like, Mayo won by 6 points in the end. They had two or three extra goal chances, which could have made it even more. It was a brilliant second half performance. And
should Galway not be at a stage, Paddy? Should Galway not be at a stage where they can deal with that now?
Oh, I think they should, to be honest. And Pádraig Joyce is there 2 years now. And like I said, Galway have really good players. They've always had talented players. Damien Comer, Shane Walsh, Peter Cope, Paul Conroy, Matty Tierney's a brilliant five from. So you're thinking they have the nucleus of a really, really good team.
And in that first half, you're looking at them thinking, like, they have the firepower that could probably cause Dublin some serious issues in an All-Ireland semi-final. And then from that to
That's the challenge for Galway, and that's what Pádraig Joyce is trying to do. He must be tearing his hair out. There is no consistency in their play. There's not. Through last year's National League and the College Championship, through this year's National League and the College Championship, like, they lose their first game in the National League by over 20 points to Kerry. Then they become a lot more solid. They should beat Monaghan up in Clonus in that relegation game, and just through inexperience, game management, just a total brain freeze down the stretch, they end up getting relegated to Division 2. Then they beat Roscommon in the Championship. You're thinking, right, they're bounced back again. But this was a huge game for Pádraig Joyce and for Galway. And they're talking about, can we be one of the top Division 1 teams? Can we win the Connacht Championship? Can we get back to the top table? And they're just so inconsistent. Like you say, in the space of two halves, they're really on top of Mayo. You think, right, Galway have arrived. And their second half, they just had no answers. Like if you look, there's a couple of plays towards the end in the last 10 minutes. Paul Conroy, Peter Cook, they end up just aimlessly kicking the ball 50 yards wide, trying to find a kick pass, because they just ran out of ideas. They had no answer for Mayo's just... Mayo bullied them in the second half. They pushed up on Conor Gleeson's kickouts. They started taking the ball off them in contact, and Mayo just flooded forward. And Galway, through maybe inexperience, but definitely through conditioning as well, you'd have to ask questions there. They had no answers to Mayo's physicality. You're thinking, where do they go from here? Like, that's a bad year for Galway to be relegated to Division 2 and like I say, be really wiped in the Connacht final. They have a hard winter ahead of them, Pádraig Joyce, to try and see how can we turn that around. Because, like, you're right, they do have really good players, but the physicality, the athleticism, and just the experience, they just have not got that.
Yeah, it's been a tough year since football restarted. You even think back to last year's league campaign and the beating that Mayo handed out to them. There's not many top-flight teams who are losing games in the manner that Galway have over the last while. The build-up to the semi-final, from Mayo point of view, again, there'll be a lot of talk about Aidan O'Shea and where he should play. Because in the second half, when they put him in right inside, you saw the impact within 2 minutes, wins that ball. Matty Ryan gets the penalty. Hey, do you just accept that Aidan O'Shea is going to have a roving role, and when you can utilise him inside, you use him there, but at times maybe actually you need him a bit further out the pitch?
100%. That's always, we said it would be the big challenge when Killian O'Connor was injured, that it may force James Horan's hand a bit to play him inside. And I think, to be honest, he's probably been doing that for years. He's been mixing between midfield and going inside. He's a handful wherever he plays. They'd love to have two Aidan O'Shea's and have one in the middle and have one on the edge of the square. I think, look, if they play Dublin or Kildare and All Ireland semi-final, you will expect to see Aidan O'Shea inside at times. Like I say, they do need him around the middle as well, you know, particularly in that first half. You know, he's a brilliant defender. He's a brilliant tackler in terms of dispossessions and things like that. He is important for Mayo to have out around there. But you're right, he causes havoc when he goes inside. And that was a big turning point. It wasn't just Aidan O'Shea. I thought the substitution James Horan made, and like I said, just the attitude of Mayo in the second half, they just steamrolled Galway. But definitely his role of going inside, obviously for the penalty, he would cause havoc. But I don't think Mayo had the luxury of playing him there for the entire game. I think they'll lead him out around the middle of the pitch, whether they play Dublin or Kildare. And that's what James Horan's just going to have to decide, that how the game is going. And particularly, like, if they play Dublin, for example, say, is Dublin's full back line, is that an area where he can get at them? And I'd 100% expect to see Aidan O'Shea in there at some point. But he's just going to have to play a roving role, because they don't have the depth to play him inside for a whole game.
Yesterday did feel like a big win for this group of Mayo players, because there's been a lot of transition. You think back to the 2017 All-Ireland final. I think only three of the Mayo team that started that day started yesterday. So, like, the team that we grew up watching over the last decade has sort of been dismantled. They, much like the Dubs, most of them are gone at this stage. So for a Matty Ruan and a Pádraig O'Hara, like yesterday, for them to come to Croke Park and deliver massive performances, the transition is probably coming to an end now for Mayo.
Yeah, and you have to give credit to James Horan there. Like, Mayo were in the All-Ireland final last year, and you could say they're a team in transition. They're still at the top table for over a decade. And you're right, like, Jim Gavin gets praised to the hilt, obviously, for the success he had with Dublin and the consistency while changing the team every year. Like I say, that's the hardest thing for a coach to do, is that when your great players are coming to the end, that you can take them out, put in young guys, and keep the show on the road. And James Horan is doing a phenomenal job in that regard. I say, Mayo got to the All-Ireland final last year when no one really expected them to. They've had a huge turnover in personnel. You know, 7-8 guys, key leaders are gone. But for me, they're still at the top table. You can see that. They steamroll Division 2. Croke Park suits them. It suits their style of play. And you've guys like, exactly, O'Hara was phenomenal yesterday. Oisín Mullan has come in. He's nearly like a Keith Higgins role now, leading that defence and breaking forward. Matty Ruan is, like, Yeah, I'd love to see Dublin play Mayo, because the battle between him and Brian Fenton will be spectacular to watch. And they still have Aidan O'Shea and looks like Killian O'Connor before we get injured, kind of leading that forward line. But guys like Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy, these are all young players coming through, and they're keeping the show on the road for Mayo. They're keeping them at the top table, even though you could say they're in transition. And that's the brilliant, brilliant job that James Horan has done there. And yesterday, you're right, for young players to come in, to get a big win in Croke Park. You know, Mayo don't have a lot of success in big games in Croke Park. So that was a big second half for them there. And they take huge confidence. They absolutely will. Like I say, whether it's Dublin, whether it's Kildare, James Horan will have those guys ready. And it's been huge progress despite the turnover players.
We saw in last year's All-Ireland final, those dastardly Dubs, Paddy, what they were trying to do to Mayo at halftime in the tunnel. And then Galway tried the same thing on poor old innocent Mayo yesterday. Oh. Do you think that was that anything to do with it? Was that the spark that Mayo needed?
I don't know. I suppose you look at the second
half.
Were you
in the tunnel last year? Were you in Croke Park?
No, I stay away from all that stuff, Nathan. I'd be no use in a row anyway. So
come on.
Leave that to Philly McMahon and the lads. No, look, to be honest, I don't think it has a huge impact at all. You could point to point and say, was that a bit of fire for Mayo? I think it was more just their attitude and their style of play in the second half. These things happen quite a lot in games, and look, I don't think they would have had a huge influence on it. I just think that the personnel, like say the two McLaughlins coming on, brought that energy to it. They just pushed up on Conor Gleeson's kickouts, and they just started dominating the game that way. I wouldn't be overly worried about a row and that sort of thing. So.
You've loads of time to preview next weekend's games on the Football Pod, which is coming your way tomorrow. But looking at Dublin very briefly, like I can't remember a time when there's been so much talk on the outside around Dublin, whether it's Cluxton, all sorts of rumours going around about rows inside the camp. They've obviously been a struggle over the first couple of Leinster games. Do you think still, even with all the experience that's gone, that inside the camp they're remaining relatively calm?
Oh, I've no doubt about that. Like, that's Dublin. It's one of their biggest strengths over the last number of years, that they don't really get caught up in anything that's going on. And we touched it on the pod a couple of weeks ago when the news about Stephen broke. That, yes, inevitably, because it's Stephen Cluxton or Keane O'Sullivan retires or Eric Clowns and these guys go, people outside the camp will talk about that. But inside, Dublin will totally focus on. They're too experienced not to. You know, Desi Farrell's been around the block, that they still have a lot of huge players with experience there. James McCarthy, Fenton, Kenny. They won't be getting carried away or worried about any external stuff. What they will be focusing on is, okay, we weren't really at our best against Wexford. Our second half against Mead, again, we weren't at our best. That's where the focus will be on for a performance on Sunday. The big thing is what Dublin supporters are hoping to see is, who have we got back from injury? You know, you're essentially the whole half-back line is missing with John Small, Owen Merchant, Robbie McDade. That brings a huge solidity and steel to that Dublin defence, which is certainly was missing probably in the third quarter where Meade got a run on them. So that will be interesting to see where they're at in that regard. And I suppose they haven't been at their best, but they're still winning the games relatively comfortably. But you're looking at what Mayo did yesterday. That was a statement in the second half. Tyrone, that was a statement against Donegal. And Kerry, every time they're taking to the pitch, they're blowing teams away. So people are waiting for Dublin to kick into gear. Because you're right, if they're not at their best and they're a little bit sloppy in games, people are going to focus on that. You know, but why is that happening? Is the turnover of players? Is Stephen not being there? Are Dublin vulnerable? I don't think so, and I don't think that's where their head is going to be at. It's going to be focused on performing against Kildare. But it will be important to see. They're going to need some of those key defenders back as the championship kicks into gear as well.
Paddy, great stuff. Episode 12 of the Football Pod with Paddy and Andy will be with you from tomorrow morning. I'm told this is the one where Paddy will finally give the exclusive on Stephen Cluxton's future. Maybe Cluxton himself might be on the podcast for
special
the
guest,
retirement interview.
Maybe, yeah. You have
that
to tune
is what
in
we want. That tune in and see. So that is coming your way tomorrow morning. It'll be available exclusively first on the OTB Sports app. So if you want to get it before everybody else, make sure you have the OTB Sports app. It is free right now in your app store. Subscribe to the Football Pod in its own feed or in the OTB GAA feed. Brilliant stuff as always over the past 11 weeks from Paddy, Andy, and Tommy. Paddy, great stuff. We'll talk to you soon. Look forward to listening.
Take it easy,
week.
Nathan.
Bye-bye. And if you're already subscribed to OTB GAA, you'll know that we have lots of reaction from the weekend's GAA in there. Michael Meehan was in Croke Park alongside Tommy yesterday for the Connacht final. Here he is on Aidan O'Shea's role.
You know, I suppose it's a balancing act for Mayo. Like, they need him in a few places, so that's why there's a bit of change there. I would say if he could be worked on and kept in full forward, he would be a dream to play with, because he's such... his ball-winning capabilities are evident for everyone to see. And he has good hands to offload to players like that, so he would be a magnificent focal point for forward, for young lads, you know, to come in and feed off and loop around. And, you know, if they could train that up... He'd cause an awful lot of hassle, because it might even take a second player to mind him, and then that frees something else up out the field, you know, to create a different threat. So that's where I think he can cause most damage for Mayo. It's just at times they call on him to come out, you know, for the midfield duel, because Gobbi did go long a lot in the first half, bypassing the Mayo press for the kick out, and that's probably why we found him out there a little bit trying to contest on that. And, you know, he found himself kind of drifting between positions probably a little bit too much in that half. In the second half, he was much more influential.
Yeah, that was Michael Meehan there talking to Tommy yesterday. You can hear that full interview with Michael on the OTB Sports app. As I say, just download and subscribe to all our GAA podcasts. We have lots more as well from the Munster football final with Mike Quirk up there, and all the weekend's hurling as well. Now, every day across the Tokyo Olympics, we'll be bringing you the OTB Sports Olympic Show across the Off the Ball channels. It is back this evening at 5 o'clock. We'll be bringing you the biggest stories of the day and also looking ahead at what's to come later tonight. It's all brought to you in association with Indeed, who are proud to support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talents. You can use the hashtag Talent Unleashed. As I say, we've got the OTB Sports Olympic Show starting tomorrow evening and running for the next 3 weeks on all our social channels. It is on air from 5 o'clock every evening and brought to you in association with Indeed. Something they may be touching on tonight is not just what's going on with the Irish athletes, but they're getting very excited over on the BBC. It's Tom Daly. You know Tom Daly, don't you? Tom Daly's won himself a gold medal at the Olympics, one of the biggest stars of Team GB. He has a bronze medal from London 2012, a bronze medal from Rio in 2016 in the diving, and just in the past couple of minutes, he has won a gold medal for the British in the diving. But let's talk about the Irish athletes and the boxers in particular, because they, as always, are among our main medal hopes at the Olympics. It's been a mixed start for the Irish boxers at the tournament so far. Ronan Mullen, our very own Ronan Mullen, is with us on the line. Morning, Ronan.
How are things, Nathan?
I'm all right. So from a boxing point of view, the feeling going in was that, you know, we had big medal hopes, particularly with Kelly Harrington, possibly with Michaela Walsh, and that for a lot of the male boxers, maybe 4 years' time was going to be a better opportunity for them, that this would be a bit of a learning experience. It's been a big learning experience, I think, for a few of them over the weekend.
Yeah, like at a certain point, it's very much draw dependent, and that's certainly the case for the boxers so far, particularly Michaela Walsh and Emmett Brennan. Emmett Brennan was basically handed an impossible hand, like the Ruzmatov guy that he was drawn with, an unseeded fighter technically, but really is one of the gold medal favourites. And Emmett Brennan was on a bit of a hiding to nothing in that one. But you kind of have to take each of these fights in isolation, each of these fighters in isolation, because for Emmett Brennan, getting to the Olympics, not to demean his achievement or to demean any route that he could have had to the podium, but getting here was an amazing achievement from where he came from, seeing as a couple of years ago you could never have foreseen the stories well told at this stage that he was had to get a credit union loan to fund his training in the latter part in this tilt towards Tokyo, you know, wasn't necessarily on the radar for an Olympic spot and got there. So I think in the cold light of day, he'll be able to look back at it positively. Michaela Walsh, on the other hand, every ounce a podium talent, like the draw just did her in this time. Again, you go to the seedings, she's a seeded fighter, one of the top four fighters in her weight category, and she comes up against Irma Testa, who beat her in the gold medal match at the qualifier in June. So it doesn't really make sense that Michaela's first fight would be against somebody like that. Just didn't work for her, didn't gel for her style-wise. She actually started all right, but I think it was a decisive enough victory in the end. And then Brendan Irvine this morning, again, it was kind of a 50-50 one. You looked at the draw and thought it's a winnable fight for him. But it just, again, he didn't quite put his pedigree into practice in that opening round and was always playing catch up. That's the way these things are. Sprint finishes and he just couldn't get the job done. And then you go to Kurt Walker on Friday, who, you know, that was almost, I don't know, you sometimes get a little bit disengaged from Irish sports teams a little bit. You're trying to cover them somewhat objectively, but I was unbelievably nervous before the Kurt Walker fight, just on the same point as Michaela Walsh, because you know this lad has all the talent and he's got a kind of a tricky assignment first up and a really difficult draw next time around. And you're just hoping he can deliver on it. So I was delighted when he won. So if we'd have been talking then, Nathan, I would have been all positive. But it's kind of a gloomy enough morning after watching three defeats on the spin.
Yeah, and as you say, the draw is all important in this. And, you know, the Michaela Walsh fight, if that was a medal fight, nobody would have been shocked and probably should have been a medal fight. And it was hard this morning pre-fight not to get excited because I think the top seed in that category had already been beaten. So you're thinking if Michaela Walsh can win this, she probably would have been favoured to actually go on and win the gold medal. She was very gracious in defeat because these are two fighters who know each other very well. And listen, I don't know how much you can learn in the space of 10, 15 minutes in a ring, but Michaela Walsh has a big, big future ahead of her.
Totally. And in her prime years, and it's kind of a little bit annoying in that sense that you could have forgiven her if she was a little bit more, I don't know, disengaged in that post-fight interview, but she was so magnanimous, just a great representative of Irish boxing. And she's been building to this moment for so long, like three medals at European level, twice a Commonwealth Games finalist. And as I said, she had the pedigree to do something big here. And it was just an awful draw, like whatever way you look at it. Like some fighters are just sort of your kryptonite, and this is just the case, a rangy fighter. And Michaela would back herself to outbox anybody, but just sometimes the dimensions get the better of you. And I was so impressed with how she started the fight with her feints, and she was up on her toes. And you could tell that defeat in June was fresh in her mind, because there was a sense then that it was a gold medal fight in a qualifying tournament. It's not the end of the world. She could have been forgiven for switching off in that one because she'd already done the main thing and qualified. But that was probably playing in her mind that she had to start fast, and she did. But it was just a numbers game in the end. The reach was too great, the distance, and the way Testa was able to implement that distance. And this is a top fighter, Italy's first female Olympic boxer in 2016, and she's come back again. So she just had that little extra bit of experience that which belied her age in some ways. She's only 23, but she just settled to the task really quickly. And yeah, you feel sorry for Michaela, as you put it there, Nathan. She, if things had have paved out for her from this fight, she could easily fend herself. Well, she would have been fighting for a medal in her next fight because she got a bye as a courtesy of that seeding. So that this was the last 16 fights, she would have been into the quarterfinals with a win here. And it was, like, as these things can be, a close fight, but at Olympic level, it only needs to be a slim margin, and that was the case.
It was hard not to get emotional watching Emma Brennan in his post-fight interview. I think he expressed so well what it meant to him to get to the Olympics and what it meant to his family, but also what he expected when he got there. As you say, it was a heck of an achievement with all he'd been through, both out of the ring and with his injuries as well. What's the immediate future for Emma Brennan then?
It's hard. It's a hard one because I think, like, the word on the street, as it were, is that he might, because he'd taken such a sabbatical from boxing, as it were, came back about 5 years ago, put it together, stepped into the breach after some top, like, Irish boxing legends basically stepped away in those higher weight categories and found his path to Tokyo. There's a sense that he might call it a day, and what better way to step away after an Olympic Games? But there is a sense that his style is very suited to the pro game we've seen, and it's not as if he's trying to sell himself, but he's just put across as such a captivating personality that there's bound to be promoters looking at him thinking there's something we could work with there, not to mention his talent in the ring. Like, even yesterday against an elite fighter, he was able to get some shots away. And as you touched on, he mentioned that, I think it was the rib injury which flared up again in that first round. And to his credit, you wouldn't really have noticed the way he finished so strongly and left it all out there. So there's definitely a future for Emma Brennan if he wants it. like he's kind of a household name in the last month of meteoric rise, and like such a personable guy, I'm sure he'll find a spot in boxing if he wants one.
I didn't get a chance to see Brendan Irvine's fight. Was it a close one?
No, it was an awkward one. It's kind of the reverse of the Michaela Walsh situation, where Irvine had the dimensions in his favour, but Palam was just such a little dynamo that he was getting 1-2 combinations up through the middle, hooks as well. And by the time the first round was over and done with, like, Palam had won that quite convincingly. Irvine did manage to stem the tide a little bit in the second round, but by then the writing was on the wall and he couldn't quite turn it around. He went to the Rio Games, obviously, very young. He's still only in his mid-20s. And, you know, if he wanted, he could definitely rally again and go back for a third crack at the Olympics. But he has another one who's kind of been beset by injuries a little bit. He was the first Irish person to qualify at that sort of ill-fated qualifying event last March, in March 2020, before the whole thing was called off. So he's been waiting around a long time to get this second bite of the cherry. I'm sure he's dispirited that he's out so quickly, but he's team captain of the Irish boxing team, and to that end he's going to be a crucial person to have around to kind of pick them up now, because there are still three boxers left who haven't boxed yet. Kurt Walker obviously has his last 16 bout on Wednesday, but the likes of Aoife O'Rourke, Aidan Walsh, Kelly Harrington in particular, there are routes to the podium for those three. So like his experience is going to be crucial. And obviously Michaela has the familial link, her brother Aidan. It's a remarkable story, but he's in action tomorrow. So there's still reasons to be cheerful. It's just off the back of three successive defeats for the Irish. It's you can be forgiven for being low, but much like Rio, again, you have to kind of take each one of these in isolation. Obviously, we look back there, you had Michael Conlon, Katie Taylor, but there were some good stories like mixed in among that. David Oliver Joyce, for example. And similarly, I think when we look back on it, Emmett Brennan got his Olympics. You know, I don't think Irvine will look at it satisfactorily, but he got to a second one. Michaela Walsh should be gutted. But if we can come away with, if the likes of Kurt Walker can get to a podium, Aidan Walsh has a path, as I mentioned. Aoife O'Rourke is kind of the surprise package a little bit, but you wouldn't put it past her. And Kerry Harrington, obviously, is the one we're kind of all hanging our hat on.
Friday, is it? I think we have to wait to see Kelly Harrington.
Friday, I think 3 a.m. Irish time. This is tough, Nathan, I have to say, getting up to watch all these fights. I think when the World Cup was on in Japan, I was over there, thankfully, so I didn't have to get up to watch, I don't know, Tonga against Fiji or whatever was happening at those hours. But you know, it's quite tricky. I think hopefully as some of these Irish boxers progress the latter rounds, obviously there's so many boxers at the moment that they have to run a full slate of fights throughout the day.
Yeah.
So by the time it gets to the latter end, like semi-final, final stage, they will be sort of midday time, so much more palatable for an Irish audience.
I forget, when you're so young, when you say the World Cup, you're talking about the Rugby World Cup and not the 2002 World Cup. Where I made the fatal error of staying up all night to watch Brazil, England, and fell asleep before Ronaldinho's goal, which is the worry with these late nights.
Watching that before going to school on, as I've mentioned on Twitter, that stand, that wheelie television stand that's brought into classrooms.
Think of beauty.
Unbelievable stuff. I was going to invest in one just for the Olympics to sort of cast back
for nostalgia.
To Sonia winning that silver medal. But Sonia Sullivan winning silver. And I just sort of trying to appreciate the gravity of the event when you can barely understand what you did the day before was quite something, but still sticks with me, I think.
There is a lot going on at the Olympics, obviously, as I say, if you can. Funnily enough, with the way the rights deal has gone this time, I don't think anyone quite realised that there had been a change to the television rights deal. So Discovery in America paid a humongous amount of money to get the rights. They own Eurosport, so they're the main rights holders, which means that the BBC, who usually do unbelievable coverage where you can click on the red button and watch everything, that's not there. They're only allowed to show a couple of things. And I think RTE are in a similar enough scenario. So Eurosport is the place to go if you want to watch, if suddenly you decide, I do want to watch France, South Africa and the football yesterday and see André Pierre Gignac get about 36 score a hat-trick for France. These are the things you can do on Eurosport. I was talking earlier about some of the things I've enjoyed so far, the women's road race and the men's triathlon last night. I was so tempted, but I just had to hang on and watch Mayo yesterday because Timmy McCarthy was on the other channel and it was France, USA. I remember going to watch these in 2012 when Tony Parker, is Tony Parker still part of this French side?
No,
long time.
No.
Gone. But France beat USA. Is this a heck of a shock?
It is, and I think you told me that story before, but it was Kobe Bryant was there in 2012, and like you could journalists could certainly be forgiven for being awestruck, but the norm actually in international basketball at these events is that the actual players are awestruck by the American team. Thankfully, that's no longer the case. This is a global game now, and everybody's playing catch up. Like, even look at the NBA. Nikola Jokic is the MVP this year. Giannis Antetokounmpo, who we talked about in the show before, Nathan, won two MVPs on the spin. So this is no longer an American-centric thing, and the French showcased that in spades yesterday. Timmy McCarthy put on an absolute clinic. He was really enjoying it, and we were all enjoying it with him. But, like, as you mentioned, little bit of complacency, I would say, from Team USA, and it's kind of been borne out in the preceding, like, sort of exhibition games where they were beaten by Nigeria. And, like, they're still prohibitive favourites to win the gold medal, but it's still, you, like, America should not be getting beaten really at all in Olympic competition. And while they've sent a semi-diluted squad, as we touched on, LeBron James is off doing Space Jam, so he's not there. And there's a few other maybe notable names that aren't there. But Kevin Durant, there's a strong argument to be made, is the best player in the world, and he's there. Damian Lillard's there. Do you know, like, on the strength of even those and the supporting cast, which is stellar, do you know, it's quite disappointing. And, like, France had started quickly. USA rallied back to take a lead in the fourth quarter and then just totally disintegrated. And the closing play, which is, I'd encourage people to go back and look, where Evan Fournier drains a three-pointer, but just the preceding events where France managed to recapture the ball and work that position was incredible. It's a pity it's not like a semi-final or something where it's still a group stage, and the likelihood is USA will navigate their way back. And to be honest, for the importance of the competition, it's probably a good thing that they're going to be there. But I think this is one that people will remember regardless.
Roland, great stuff. Are you going to nap? Are you going to power through?
I don't know. Aidan Walsh is up at 3 a.m. tomorrow, so I'm going to have to sort of think that one through.
You got to sleep sometime.
I know, but I've got a... The PM show is coming at you tonight, Nathan, so I have to sort of prepare myself for that as well. But sure, we'll discuss that later.
It's almost 10 to 9. Get yourself 3 hours sleep, Ron. You'll be good to go again. Great stuff from Ronan Mullen. And just a reminder that the OTB Sports Olympic Show in association with Indeed is live from 5 o'clock tonight across the OTB channels. The OTB Sports app is the best place to listen in, so you can download that right now for free in your app store. Right, we mentioned Galway earlier this morning in our performance rankings. We're talking hurling and camogie next with former Cork and Dublin star and current Dublin camogie coach Sarah O'Donovan. But first, here is James Skehill with his reaction to Galway's defeat to Waterford and the impact it may have on retirements this winter.
Well, Galway people, like the hurling fraternity, are quite a proud bunch. And, you know, you look at our record over the league, means nothing. Let's be honest about that. The league, Welsh Cup, any of those tournaments, you know, they have absolutely no, I suppose, effect on a managerial record whatsoever. Our record in the last 2 years is 2 championship wins in 6 games. We beat Wexford last year in the Leinster Championship and beat Tipperary in a qualifier. We've lost every other game. You know, that record is not good. So I think there's going to be a review internally. And I think even for Shane himself, he's going to review and say, can he offer any more travelling up from Limerick when you know, times are so difficult in the midst of COVID all the time, you know, and he's got a young family as well. So there's going to be, I think, a review both on the side of the management from themselves and also internally with county board and club level.
Probably to take that one step further, like, again, there's a lot of players that you know well in the camp there as well. I won't say the last dance mentality, but wouldn't be surprised if there's a number of players there that probably will bow on and we mightn't see them in action again next year.
Yeah, I think... I actually think a big thing today was Joe thankfully got the record, which is a great feat to have for him, and like, congratulations to him. But I think, let's say, I'm not sure how much time he's left in the Galway jersey. You look at the team as a whole, the panel as a whole, I think it's in need of rejuvenation. I think it's in need of an injection of youth, whereby we need to take some of these minors that we've won the last 4 of, or 3 or 4, and integrate them into the team sooner rather than later, and try build a team, not for today or tomorrow, but I think for a couple of years' time. And that's important. I think if we keep going with the clientele we have at the moment, we'll get probably similar results as we had today. I honestly don't know where the result came out of. Like, we look at their league form, so championship form was chalk and cheese. So I'm not sure what evidence you know, there is that were shown today to tell you that the same group or the same players can challenge for an Ireland next year. So I think there's going to be a lot of soul searching done. The guys in the team who have been there for 10, 12 years, you know, they'll probably look at their situation and they look at the team and they'll say, am I going to put in this much effort for 12 more months? Is there not Ireland in this team? When you're facing the likes of, you know, Limericks, and you're facing the Corks, who have all the youth coming through and they're there to stay, I think there's going to be a lot of questions asked. But I'd say there could be three or four timers in Galway at this stage.
Yeah, interesting stuff there from James Skehill. There's loads more on that. If you want to listen to the podcast, it is on the OTB Sports app. Just subscribe to OTB GAA. You'll get all of that every weekday and every weekend. Or you can watch it, of course, on our social channels. Sarah O'Donovan is with us. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. So the draw has been made for the All-Ireland Hurling quarterfinals. Just in the past couple of moments, it is Dublin against Cork and Tipperary against Waterford. What do you make of that?
A big smiley head in me this morning. I think Munster has proved the acid test for teams, and I think Cork will be better prepared going into the Dublin game.
The Sarah O'Donovan derby.
I'll actually be in Down myself. We're playing Down in Newry, so I won't get to be there. But certainly from my experience, Cork and Dublin games are fiery. You know, it's gone either way on a couple of occasions, but I do fancy Cork because Cork have had those tests now in the last couple of games. Dublin were obviously unlucky with COVID and went into the Leinster final with a lot of pressure on them, didn't deliver. Cork came out yesterday, had to answer questions against Clare and answered them emphatically. I felt they were very physical and their physicality finally caught up with their pace, which I loved.
As I mentioned, your focus will be elsewhere, but come on, who are you going to be cheering for?
Cork, 100%. I bleed red. You know, this is ultimately where I'm actually in Cork today, which is probably why Corkness is just running through me today.
So Dublin, Cork, the winners of that will play Limerick in the All-Ireland semi-final, and Tip against Waterford, the winners of that, will play Kilkenny. So we know now exactly how the rest of the summer is going to pan out. Let's talk about Cork then. 319 to 123 winners over Clare. Kind of feel I need to start though with that save at the end, because I think both managers touched on it, that this was proper championship hurling, and so much of our analysis is based on the result. If Tony Kelly smacks that in, as we all expected them to do, we're probably talking again about Tony Kelly, potential hurler of the year, and Clare as All-Ireland contenders. And for once for Tony Kelly, the magic didn't happen.
Man from Ballinhassick, Pat Collins, steps up, and you know, they talk about brilliant saves and important saves, and he was very effective throughout the game. But to be that focused in the last minutes, you know, we talked about Nicky Quaid for Limerick over the years being so important, and Pat Collins was the same yesterday. Goalkeepers really are the stars of the show in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it was an absolute, listen, it was a game-winning save from Pat Collins. In terms of where Cork are then, because Clare had been pretty hotly tipped heading into this game, and they had good momentum behind them as well. But like Cork, defence in particular, Robert Downey, Sean O'Donoghue, with Damian Cahillan out with appendicitis, probably not going to be back, it seems, for the quarterfinal either. A lot of players really came to the fore this weekend.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you rely on players because they've been there always, and appendicitis is a cruel thing. You know, obviously Damon Callan steps out and then Robert Downey has to step into his shoes, and he fills those shoes. I really thought himself, Sean O'Donoghue, Niall O'Leary answered so many questions yesterday that previously went unanswered. And sometimes, you know, I think crucially, they're not carrying any expectation. These are new guys who are fresh. They haven't the disappointment and they hurl like that. That was really, really exciting for me yesterday.
Is there not always a level of expectation when you're a Cork hurler?
100%. It's what they live and breathe in Cork, you know. There's so many men in Cork who are happy today. I cannot explain. Now, on the negative side, obviously, the football will move swiftly on. I'm glad Paddy Andrews was on earlier and we don't have to talk about it. But it'll be completely overshadowed by the Cork hurling win. Completely overshadowed.
Because there is a spot that we were talking about on Friday's show. Adrian Barry was christening Clare as the second best team in the country at that stage. But like, that is a debate that you could have all night long, because everyone is in agreement that Limerick are way up here. That actually, like, Cork may well be the second best team in the country. Am I going too far?
Yeah, you're going too far. I think Kilkenny probably are the closest team to Limerick right now. In terms of their bench, in terms of their ferocity, in terms of their key forwards, in terms of their match-winning ability. But I wouldn't discount Cork. I just think that they are on a developmental path and Kilkenny are more refined.
It's a perfect draw then, maybe, for a team that are on a developmental path, because like, that is a big win against the coming force again in Clare. And as you said, a draw now against Dublin, who, listen, they had their COVID issues in that Leinster final, which maybe sucked the life out of them for that game. But then the winners of that would play Limerick. We will learn an awful lot about Cork over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and look, going back to Dublin, Galway's loss yesterday probably puts the win by Dublin in a different light. Some teams are brilliant to train and some teams are built to win championship matches. And I wonder, when we're looking at the championship games coming on, I heard Shane McGrath just after the draw saying Tipperary have Waterford's number. It's a psychological battle at this point. You know, going into the Clare game yesterday, Cork had beaten Clare on the last seven of eight occasions, and that has to play on the minds of the players going into these games. So Cork will have to look at the Dublin game first, can't look past it, can't consider what's coming afterwards, which is obviously a mammoth task against Limerick. Dublin probably are going into the game with less pressure because people will assume that it's Cork's game to lose. So there's pluses and minuses for Cork with the draw.
Like, Tip may well think they've Waterford's measure, but like, we don't really know what to expect from Waterford, because like, Laois pushed them all the way just over a week ago, and then they come out against Galway, and to be 16 points up at one stage, was that down to the brilliance and the system of Waterford, or was it just a total systems failure from Galway?
I was pulling into Parnell Park yesterday on Saturday when that match was being played out, and we were obviously playing Waterford in our own championship game. And I pulled in next to supporters from Waterford, and they were absolutely beaming inside in the car. And I looked across and I said, "What's the story?" And they said, "We're up 14 points. And I went, "Oh, mother of Jesus," because I knew then the Waterford Camogie players would be coming with that same ferocity, you know, that belief. You're coming up in a car, you're listening to your county comrades beating Galway, beating the lights out of Galway, and they're coming in to play us in Parnell Park. And I was sickened, to be honest. And the result proved that way from our point of view. But I just felt from Waterford's point of view on Saturday, they had 11 different scorers. They weren't relying on two or three different guys. They play with such intensity and they do everything fast first. You know, a really impressive running game. I suppose, obviously, it's backboned by Jamie Barron. But, you know, Jack Fagan's goal, there's three or four players bombing, running off him. He's so many options. And that's so hard to stop.
And it's a Waterford squad like that is full of talent. I know Tadhg Burke is a huge loss, but like when you have Ozzie Gleeson there and Jamie Barron and like Desi Hutchinson still capable of moments of magic, like this is a team who got to an All-Ireland final last year, who we sort of forget about it. We don't seem to put in that top rank of who is the second best team after Limerick, yet who have delivered some of the best championship performances over the past couple of years.
And that's what I'm referring to. Some teams love to train and some teams are just built, designed to win championship matches, and that's Waterford. Derek Lyons is over the Waterford Camogie team, and obviously Callum had a spectacular game on Saturday, and before the throw-in you could see him, he was absolutely beaming, you know, real pride in the jersey, real pride in their players, and they have no fear when they take any team on. And I think that's the beauty of Waterford hurling, is that yes, you know, Tipperary will feel like they have Waterford's measure, but Waterford are saying no, we're built for championship, we know how to win games.
Galway don't know how to win games anymore. Like you mentioned, the manner of defeat to Dublin, and then to whatever about the last gasp comeback, and maybe it would have been one of the greatest comebacks of all time. We're talking about their character and how they never gave up. But when you find yourself 16 points down a match, you don't deserve anything from it. Like it has been a very, very flat couple of years for this group.
You know, their league form and their championship form are chalk and cheese, right? What I will say about Galway and Dublin game was, Galway were criticised heavily after the Dublin game for going for goals early and being too direct, you know, and then obviously losing the game in the manner which they did. And it was suggested that they should have kept the battle rhythm going, kept the game tipping over. And then you saw in the game against, when you saw the game yesterday, when they went direct and when Jason Flynn scored those two goals, you were saying, God, why weren't they more direct earlier? So it's kind of a juxtaposition. We were giving out to them for being so direct against Dublin early on. And then yesterday saying, you waited till the last 20 minutes to go at them. You know, it appears that their game management has kind of fallen off this year, which is disappointing. And as I said, the league didn't suggest that they were actually in trouble.
We should still give a mention to Joe Canning on becoming the all-time leading scorer, 27 goals, 485 points after 9 points at the weekend. Turns 33 later this year. James Skettle touched on him there. I heard Ollie Canning talking about how many more years of Joe Canning do we have left. Every ounce of every being in goal will be saying, Joe, don't leave us now in our hour of need.
I don't think Joe has to go. Tom Brady's still playing at 40. Joe was pinging a pass to Jason Flynn yesterday. His vision, his fitness, leave Joe alone. Joe doesn't need to retire. And look, you know, if we're chasing the best out of the game at this stage, you know, we need to cop onto ourselves. Joe doesn't need to go.
It is an incredible record, though. And it's great that actually we do have these records. I know a lot of people have done a lot of work, because it's one thing the GAA is really lacking is that archive of statistics that we can go back through the 140 years as it near is now and compare the greats through the different eras. But to know that Joe Canning is the best of the best and surpass King Henry is one of the great achievements.
And Henry Shefflin's not going to mind either. You know, I think hurling is such an amazing sport and it gives such thrills. And, you know, you look at fallen heroes yesterday, you look at Tony Kelly scoring 111 and leaves the field in defeat. You cannot... And there'd be better players, you know, and that's the beauty of it. Joe now has set the standard. Henry set it before him. There will be players will emulate Joe. And, you know, no more than Owen Cody, we're talking about exciting players coming through. It's always going to be the future in hurling. And that's why I'm slow to kind of say goodbye to these guys, because you need the new guys to see these guys to their absolute prime and keep pushing them.
You touched on your other role as Dublin Camogie coach in the match against Waterford, who did take a lot from the men's team and did come out all guns blazing. It was a tough day at the office for Dublin.
It was. And look, you know, we didn't expect it because our team trained really, really well. And it's really hard to foresee a result like that when your team gives you everything on the training pitch. So I suppose from our point of view, it's about turning that incredible intensity in training into championship winning form. And we have to find that with our players. We're out of the championship now. It's a cruel thing. You only have kind of one chance, essentially. Cork were seen as the favourites in the group. We lost Cork the first day out. It was all pinned on us beating Waterford. Waterford had beaten down by a point, had gone ahead last week at the last score of the game, and then came out against us and, you know, 14 points the better. So they're now through to the quarterfinals. We have a game against Down. Whoever loses goes into a relegation battle again, because obviously in the league we had survived relegation beating Waterford. Waterford are probably thinking, God, how did we leave that one go? Because they play Division 2 now next year in the Camogie because of that defeat to us. There's a lot going to be asked of this Dublin team in the next week. And I heard obviously James Gehill talking about the past and the future in terms of Galway hurling. And there'll be players on our Dublin team who will be wondering if they want to come back next year. And I suppose what we will be looking for is a performance to allow the future of Dublin Camogie to experience playing the Kilkennys and Galways. And don't leave, you know, the championship so quietly, because the future of Dublin Camogie requires us to be playing at the top level.
How are you then that night when, as you feel, you've had a really good week of training and everything is set up and the performance doesn't come?
It's so incredibly difficult to look out at the stand and see the parents and the families and the coaches, and they're looking at you and thinking, oh, what have you been doing for the last 2 or 3 weeks, you know? And I suppose from the players' point of view, they are going to be most disappointed in themselves. You go to training on Wednesday night and they will be looking back at you saying, you know, we don't know what happened. And it's about parking it. The best people to park it this year are clearly Waterford, you know, losing to Clare in the Munster final in the hurling and then having a poor day out against Leash, and then new different animal when they come into the big, big games. And I suppose that's what we have to do with Dublin, is find a way of bringing this new intensity on next Saturday against Down.
Just looking at the rest of the Camogie Championship then, as we head into that final weekend, Galway, Kilkenny, Cork, Tip, all looking well positioned.
Yeah, actually, it's set up already. Every team that needed to qualify for a quarterfinal has won their two games. So there's very little to decipher over the next weekend. I suppose it's just about those kind of players on the periphery of teams putting up their hand and looking for a championship start. You know, Tipperary were very impressive with their win over Limerick. And then in the same token, Limerick in the league had been excellent and had really, you know, had worked Kilkenny to the bone to get them over the line. And we were surprised that Limerick, you know, now find themselves in potentially a relegation battle like us. But Wexford, Tip, Cork, Waterford have all done the business.
Sarah, very best of luck next weekend. Dublin up against Down in that relegation playoff. Hope it all works out for you. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Sarah O'Donovan there at Dublin Camogie coach. And a reminder as well of that breaking news, the draw for the All-Ireland hurling quarterfinals, Dublin against Cork. The winner of that will play Limerick in the semi-finals and Tip against Waterford. The winner of that one will play Kilkenny in the All-Ireland semi-finals. Both those games will take place next Saturday. Times and venues will be confirmed for them later today. So it's just 9:05 on this Monday morning. You're watching OTBAM, the sports breakfast show from Off the Ball. It's brought to you with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Rugby coming up shortly with Alan Quinlan, but first here's Brian O'Driscoll, who was on full live match commentary for us on Saturday, talking about South Africa's style of play and Cheslin Colby.
But just on the point that Quinny, you know, mentioned, you see, negative rugby like that is fine when you're winning, but when you're losing it looks horrific. And you know, I don't think the Springboks passed the ball outside Damian Diolande the whole day, barely. There was one other sequence of play, maybe, that they tried to shift it through a couple of sets of hands, and Robbie Henshaw batted the ball out of Lucanio Am's hands. So you've got one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in Cheslin Colby, and you have him chasing box kicks all day long. That is crazy. So next week, they're going to have to play a little bit more open, a little bit more expansive, and give that their you know, X factor player more of an opportunity of creating something and doing what we have come to expect, be it in the green of the Springboks or in the red of Toulouse. He has been sensational since the World Cup, even not getting to play any test match rugby. So you can't have him running after box kicks, which he'll do for you because he's an honest player. But that is a difficult watch. I'm sure if you're a Springbok, it's a difficult watch even as a Lion, as a rugby fan, of watching a guy like him trying to chase after 10, 15 box kicks in a game.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
Will has been in touch. He says, haha, I like how during the rankings, Nathan was saying, never has a side been as talked up as much as this Kerry side without doing it. LOL, Mayo for the last 10 years. Whatever, Will. Back in an All-Ireland semi-final. Again, back where Mayo belong. Phil Egan is with us. How you keeping, Phil?
Good, yeah. Good to see you haven't lost that Mayo swagger. It's back.
Hey, when you're from Mayo, you never lose the swagger. It's just an ingrained part of you. I really hope that Dublin win next weekend now so we can do a little bit of Mayo-Dublin nostalgia for once, because, of course, it'll be, what, 15 years? 15 years is a good nostalgic piece, isn't it? What, 15 years ago when Mayo and Dublin met in an All-Ireland semi-final? We'll have to give Mossy a shout and see, will he come on and do a nice little piece on that, maybe?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say probably my worst day at Croke Park.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was horrific. And it spilled into the post-match celebrations for some people. But yeah, it was crushing. Obviously, Dublin were in cruise control. A bit like Galway yesterday. Well, you kind of felt Mayo would come back. But then McDonald pops up with the winning point, that little finger wag celebration. And
did you see him yesterday on the sideline?
Yeah,
he'll still do a job. Sensational.
Yeah,
the hair, like it's younger looking. He's getting.
He's can you?
I'm not sure what it could be like. I do worry there's a touch of the Glenn Hoddles off him. That there's no way he can't be at training pinging him over left footed from 50 yards, and the lads aren't going, Jesus, I can't do that.
He's doing a few drills. He's like, right, so you get through here, you come, you take your hand pass, and then he's 50 yards out, just outside of the left foot, bang over the black spot, and then they're all looking at him going, so you want us to do that? Yeah, no, he still looks like he's primed, ready to go.
Did you cry in 2006, Phil?
No. But just, do you know what, just stunned silence. Just
great.
Stunned silence would have left Croke Park and would have taken a while to get over. Like, I'm a lot better now because, obviously, well, Dublin don't really lose anymore. But in terms of sporting upsets, say even like the Irish football team or whatever, if it's a disappointing result, once the final whistle goes, actually, I'm a lot better in terms of being able to get it out of my system.
Maturity, Phil. Maturity.
I think it is. Yeah, you realise, look, there's more important things. At the time, it feels like the be-all and end-all. But, that was crushing.
Are you in any ways worried about Sunday, about this Dublin side, about all that's going on? around it, all the noise?
No, I wouldn't be. Do you know what? I think they'll beat Kildare. Wouldn't necessarily be expecting an amazing performance, but that mightn't be the worst thing, to go in, let Mayo get talked up, and then Dublin just turn up and produce the performance that they haven't produced yet. So, but like, Mayo would definitely be a concern. I know a few friends of mine are thinking, geez, Mayo are really going to put it up to Dublin if we get Pascal there.
Oh, just Mayo, just honoured to be on the pitch with such a great group of players.
We're all playing second fiddle behind Kerry, really, aren't we?
Well, we all know that. Jesus, that's no point even turning up for the final. have you sorted out your work-life balance for the Olympics then? Were you up at 3 a.m, or are you playing catch-up when you wake up?
I'm playing catch-up. Obviously, I was in early this morning. Great news to wake up to find out that Mona McSharry is into the final of the 100-metre breaststroke. So, you know, you looked at her heat yesterday and she was close to her national record. She obviously was close to it again today. So what you look for, obviously, when you see these Irish athletes competing at the Olympics is PBs or close to PBs. And the fact that she's in a final now, she obviously scraped in. She's in as the eighth qualifier, but brilliant for her. Like, her first Olympics, she's only 20. And she would have learned her trade in the same swimming pool that I would have been in as a kid every summer in Ballyshannon.
Wow. Well, where did it all go wrong, Phil?
I was actually looking at the diving this morning and I was thinking, like, I can't even, like, even off any kind of height, I can't dive properly. I'm like Peter Kay in the ad where it just jumps in, cannonball, water goes everywhere.
Well, it could be worse. Google Dave McIntyre diving, Phil, and
I've seen it. And he loves when you bring that up.
Could be worse.
Yeah,
he absolutely loves it. Yeah. So, if you can increase the views on that, go search Dave McIntyre diving. Was it Ollie Dingley he was out with?
Yeah.
Obviously, so some of the big news from this morning, from away from the Irish, was Tom Daly. They're going to be insufferable today. Tom Daly's got himself a gold.
Yeah, Tom Daly and Maddie Lee. Claimed a gold medal in the synchronised 10-metre platform in Tokyo, and I tweeted a short time after it saying, haven't seen such an impressive diving performance from an English pair since the Euros.
Yeah.
So you take your pick.
You're on form this morning, Phil. You're on form this morning.
I am. I'll just go through basically what's happened with the Irish athletes. Obviously, I mentioned Mona McSharry. That's the highlight. She's going to be back in the final tomorrow. So that's tomorrow evening. She clocked a time of 1:06.59, so a little bit outside the time that she did yesterday, but only the second Irish swimmer ever to make an Olympic final, and this is her first Olympics, only 20 years of age. Ellen Walsh goes in the women's 200 metre individual medley just before 12. Brendan Hyland's in action just before that in the men's 200 metre butterfly. Now, obviously, boxing is Ireland's most successful Olympic sport, but it was talked about a few days ago when the draw was made that the Irish boxers did not get a good draw, and I think we've really seen that this morning. Disappointment from Michaela Walsh. She bowed out in the last 16 of the featherweight division, losing to Italy's Irma Testa by unanimous decision. Brendan Irvine, the team captain for the boxers, also beaten. He lost to Carlo Palama of the Philippines in the last 32 of the men's flyweight division. That fight a little bit closer, but he was on the wrong end of a 4-1 split decision. Rio silver medalist Annalise Murphy finished 24th in race 3 of the laser radial in sailing. She's back in action in race 4 as we speak. Liam Jegu missed out on a place in the final of the canoe slalom. He finished last of 15 in the semi-finals. He was motoring so well, and then he missed two gates towards the end. He got penalised, and you could see by his reaction he knew that was it, and so disappointing for him. But you know, I'd expect to see him back in Paris. The beauty
I can't cope with the emotion. I can't cope with the emotion of the Irish athletes.
My God, yeah.
When Jegu, when his oar clipped the pole, like within a hundredth of a second, his head was gone.
Yeah.
Like, he just knew that was it. It was over. And as you say, he was absolutely motoring at that stage.
Yeah.
He could barely finish the race.
Nah, it's soul destroying. I think the two interviews that stand out over the weekend, obviously, are Emma Brennan and Jack Woolley. And yeah, I don't know. You touched on it earlier. Maybe I'm maturing, but I find these are just so emotional that they're really hard interviews to watch, especially just after it. I don't know if you saw the taekwondo, but Jack Woolley was obviously going there thinking he had a chance of winning a medal, and he was ahead of his Argentinian opponent and just got pipped at the end, and he was an absolute bits. And then obviously Emma Brennan, we know how much he sacrificed to get there, and he breaks down in his interview as well, basically just saying that his body has broken down in the last few months, and you know, you train, you get there, and your body, you just want to be in the best shape of your life, but it's not always the case, unfortunately. You need that bit of luck that injuries go your way. So yeah, the interviews are really, really tough to watch, because they're so raw. I mean, we saw that at the Rio Olympics, obviously, with Conlon and Katie Taylor, for example, where it's tough to watch. But yeah, some of the other things to look out for, the hockey team, the Ireland women's hockey team, obviously started with a win, but much tougher opponents today. They played the Netherlands, who they lost in the World Cup final 3 years ago. The Dutch won 4-0. It was actually a lot closer until the fourth quarter, and the Dutch eventually just ground the Irish players down, and they won 4-0. Three of those goals coming in the final quarter. So Ireland back in action against Germany on Wednesday. Ireland's first Olympic campaign in the rugby sevens started with a 33-14 defeat to South Africa, but they'll be back in action at 10:30 this morning when they face the USA. The USA beat Kenya 19-14, so that's another tough game. Russell White finished 48th in the triathlon final, 9 minutes and 36 seconds behind the winner, Kristin Blummenfelt of Norway. In badminton, Nat Nguyen will be in action at 11:20 in his opening singles match this morning in Group F. Just some of the other things, Australia's Ariane Tittmann's got the better of 5-time Olympic gold medal winner Katie Ledecky in the 400 metre freestyle. You mentioned Tom Daly and Matty Lee winning gold. Naomi Osaka progressed around 3 with a straight sets win over Victoria Golubic. And 13 years of age, the Japanese skateboarder Nihisha Momiji won gold in the women's Olympic skateboarding street competition. So the Japanese are doing well in the skateboarding. And I'm just going to finish.
Here's my kids sitting in the sitting room playing bloody Roblox.
Yeah, well,
look, we go to the Olympics in 4 years.
Get a skateboard. But I'll be honest with you, I remember we got skateboards as kids and there was injuries within probably 10 minutes. And one of them was a severe injury. The draw for the quarterfinals of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship, Cork and Dublin, Tip and Waterford, both games on Saturday. We'll get the details later today. And I know this is an event you would have attended plenty of times. Day one of the Galway races.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. First race.
Day one is fine. It's by the time it gets to day 4, day 5.
Oh, yeah, I know, it's brilliant. I know you used to live in Galway, so you know Galway is absolutely hopping. It's a bit different, obviously, this year, but I suspect there's going to be more people around Galway than actually in.
Like, this is the bizarreness and the ridiculousness of the situation where I'm sure Quay Street is going to be packed, but 1,000 people are allowed into the race course.
Yeah. Hopefully they get the weather, because the times I've been there and the weather's been good, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. So, if you're going to go over the week, enjoy. Phil, great stuff as always.
Thanks, Nathan.
We'll have lots more Mayo Dublin 2006 banter to come over the coming weeks, no doubt. Great stuff from Phil Egan. A reminder that here on OTB Sports, we are broadcasting every game from the British and Irish Lions tour to South Africa, live on Off the Ball. Lions legend Brian O'Driscoll joined Neil Tracy on commentary for the first test on Saturday, and the two of them are going to be back once again for the second test, coming live this Saturday at 5 o'clock as the Lions look to seal the test series. Our Lions coverage is brought to you in association with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions. Alan Quinlan is with us. Thank you, Quinny.
Morning, lads. How are you?
Very well. We just got all bowed down, I guess, and say Warren Gatland, the greatest coach of the modern age, eh?
Well, he got it right on Saturday, didn't he? Particularly the reaction after halftime. It wasn't pretty. I think if you were looking for open, expansive rugby, you would have been disappointed. Frustrating watch, but he got the job done. And I think tactically, they were a lot better in the second half. Their aerial battle, the kicking game in particular, and their forward pack, they were much more pragmatic, controlled the ball a lot better, and put so much pressure on the South Africans that they wilted and they looked tired in the end.
How much stock do you put in what happened in the first half then, when you're sitting down doing your analysis of the game, because it is the first test. You know, as much as the South Africans are undercooked, the Lions, by and large, with the exception of the A game, haven't really been tested either. Is that just a bit of blowing off steam and two sides getting to know each other? And actually, you judged it far more on the second half performance than what happened in the first 40, where the South Africans, certainly territory-wise, were far more dominant.
Yeah, look, they didn't want to make any excuses afterwards, but South Africa looked very tired. They looked like a team who haven't played in a long time. Their preparation was obviously hampered by the game, second Georgia game being called off. COVID, 24 in their squad had COVID. So it's had to have an effect. I think they obviously were full of energy in the first half, and they made it look pretty easy and simple in what they were trying to do, and they were very, very dominant in the collision areas. Their kicking game was really good, and they were in a great position at 12-3 at halftime, and looked like, I think it was a really poor performance. I think the feeling at halftime I would have had was this is big, big trouble for the Lions. They're really sloppy here, and they're second best to everything, and South Africa are not having to overextend themselves or play a lot of rugby to be in this position. And I think it was a brave call after halftime, and they had a kickable penalty, and Alan Wynne-Jones decides to go to the corner right after halftime, and that try was a huge momentum shifter for the Lions. And the Cowan-Dickie try, I think that gave them the confidence and belief that if they were direct and more physical themselves, that they could get a result here and keep it pretty simple. And that's what they did very, very well. And I was very surprised with South Africa. Tactically, they were really poor in the second half. And, you know, they'd play two phases and then slow it down and try, and the Klerk could try a box kick, or they'd pass out to Billy LaRue and he would try that cross-field kind of up and under. And it didn't work. So South Africa didn't really have any answers when they had to start chasing the game a little bit, and they made a lot of mistakes. I think they will be a lot better for the match. You make the point that they haven't really been tested, the Lions, but bar that South African A game, which we all know was closer to a Springbok side, their match fitness would have been far better than the South Africans. And I think it told in the end, mentally and physically. They looked tired in the second half, but you have to give credit to Warren Gatland, his coaches and his players. The impact off the bench was very good, and they looked like a side that were, even though the scoreline was pretty close, there was only one score in it. And if, you know, Vili LaRue's try is ruled out and Dialinde's try is ruled out, if one of those went in, Springboks probably would have won the game. And It was small margins, but I think, you know, the Lions deserved it for what they did in the second half.
It was fun last week with all that was going on off the pitch with the TMO and the bit of back and forth between Razzie Erasmus and Warren Gatland. The South Africans were very gracious in their post-match interviews around some of the decisions that went against them. It's been interesting over the last 24 hours. I don't know if you spotted this. There was Razzie Erasmus was retweeting some criticism of the referee and some of the decisions from an account by Jaco Johan, who had like 17 followers, but had very in-depth analysis of the decisions that went against South Africa. Jaco Johan is no more, and Razzie Erasmus has now been tweeting himself in the past few hours pretty much the exact same videos that Jaco Johan had, criticizing tackling Cheslin Colby in the air, and also the fact he's dragged up off the ground when he's down injured, and this isn't a good example for children. Is this, firstly, you know, can you understand why they're a bit peeved with the refereeing decisions? And do you expect a bit more of this mind games over the rest of the week from the South Africans?
I do understand why they're upset and frustrated. I think there was... they got a couple of penalty decisions in the first half that, the Lions could argue. But certainly all the big calls went in the Lions' favour in the second half. Hamish Watson should have been yellow card for the tackle on Billy LaRue. That was a mistake. I think Vili LaRue being ahead of Mapimpi when he kicked it, it was marginal. I think it was the right call, but there was no clear evidence there. And the first thing the TMO, Marius Jonker, said was, it's not clear. And then in the end, he said, well, he was definitely ahead of the kicker. So he contradicted himself. Colby knocks on from a box kick, which D'Alinde scores in the end, and didn't really create a lot, but I think some of those decisions definitely went in the Lions' favour. And, you know, I think what Warren Gatland did last week was perfect. Putting the pressure on Marius Jonker as the South African TMO, the eyes of the world were going to be on him for some of those decisions. And I think he bottled a few of them in the second half. But they do balance themselves out, but there was a few decisions that were questionable. I'm not saying they were wrong, but they were questionable. And I just thought Nick Berry, the referee, he gave all those decisions to the Lions in the second half. But in saying all that, they were the team with the energy. They were the ones who were looks like they were in more control. They completely turned around the energy that they had in the second half compared to the first half. They won a lot of loose ball, and you know, they weren't expansive. They had only two line breaks in the whole game. So it's clean break. So South Africa had six. There was just a little bit of individual brilliance and a few open field runs from guys, but it wasn't an expansive game. And I think it was quite attritional. And I think they probably figured that out at halftime. There's no point in trying to move the ball around here because it's too risky. Let's just try and get a win here any way we can. Get our noses in front. And I thought it was really impressive after halftime. But there's certainly a few calls there that South Africa would be a bit disappointed with.
Looking at the second test then and potential changes for the Lions, because it obviously wasn't a flawless performance. Ron Nagar was saying on Sky after the game, maybe looking at sort of 9 to 13 as areas that didn't fully function, and Dan Bigger has to go through the HIA process. Elliot Daly didn't have his best game and gave away a couple of important penalties, so there may be changes there. Sam Warburton was saying that he'd bring Toby Faletau in for Jack Conan.
Well, I just think that's... I see that in some of the headlines that's a possibility. Look, he's a brilliant player, Faletau. But I thought Jack Conan throughout this whole tour has been really, really good. He looks super fit. He looks hungry for the ball. And without the ball, he's making his tackles. He's very, very close to all the action all the time. And he's great footwork. So, look, I think it'd be a very harsh call. I thought he was really, really good on Saturday, particularly in that second half. There is an argument to try and bring Farrell back, to get Farrell back in somewhere, because I don't think Elliot Daly played well. It's very difficult for an outside centre, though, when, you know, even the Robbie Henshaw situation the first half, when you saw Lucanu Am shooting out of the line and, you know, stopping him way behind the game line and smashing him, and then they counter up that and turn them over. It's difficult to play. They're a very hard team to play against, South Africa, and to move the ball. So I just think maybe with Farrell's experience and maybe a little bit of the swagger of getting that penalty, which you just felt he was never going to miss, his experience, he might come into contention. They might move around that midfield situation, put Henshaw to 13, put Farrell at 12, or even bring in Bundiaki or Chris Harris. I just don't think the centre partnership worked as well as maybe we had hoped. Elliot Daly hadn't played at 13 since 2016, so it's a long time for him. And then the pressure you're getting. So I wouldn't make too many changes, to be honest. Why make changes? I know he wants to maybe freshen it up a little bit, but we've been talking about cohesion in this whole tour, and we haven't seen these combinations play too often together. But I suspect Gatland will make one or two calls. I think, you know, we were, from an Irish point of view, disappointed that Ty Byrne didn't get the start at blindside. But to be fair, Courtney Laws had a really big, big, big second half, like most of his counterparts. And that Lions pack were very, very impressive. So he might tweak one or two calls, but I don't see too many changes. I think Farrell is probably the one that comes to mind. Ali Price did really well in that second half. I know Conor Murray played really well when he came on and did what he does best. His kicking was really accurate, and they saw out the game. But I wouldn't see too many changes, to be honest. I don't think they're justified. I don't think they're needed, but Warren Gatland may do it.
it's kind of unbelievable what Jack Conan has done on this tour when you think of the couple of years that he has had with injury, with the amount of depth that Leinster have in the back row, and you know whether he was good enough to be in that Leinster back row, never mind the Ireland back row, and now he's starting and performing brilliantly in a Lions test series. Like, geez, it's incredible credit to him for what he has done
incredible.
In bringing the breast out of himself.
I remember chatting to him in Australia a couple of years ago and on the Irish tour in 2018, and I'm a fan of Jack Conan's. I just think there was something missing, that bit of confidence or that bit of aggression or that swagger that you need kind of to play at the top level, that presence. And I remember thinking about a year ago, Jesus, is this guy's career over? You know, he had a couple of dreadful injuries. Max Deegan was on the scene in Leinster, Caelan Doris. You know, where is he going to fit in? How is he going to get back here? Does he need to move on somewhere else? And it just goes to show that if you keep that perseverance in sport, we all love a story of a comeback. And I had a few myself in my career with injuries and stuff like that. And there's a great personal feeling when you come back from injuries and you start achieving things. And, you know, he should be very proud of himself. I think, you know, no matter what happens in the rest of this tour, I think it's been sensational from him to go from not being involved with Leinster and kind of being out of the picture to, you know, playing so well against England and Dublin, and just showing his ability and that talent that he has, getting onto a Lions tour and then starting the first test and being very, very prominent in that test. So it's an incredible story, and being the main man singing the song in the dressing room afterwards, which is, you know, it's lovely. That's why you do it. And they won't care, Nathan. I think at the end of the day, we're all, you know, I was a bit disappointed with the game. I wasn't surprised, but I really hoped that we'd see some expansive rugby and excitement and relentless pressure and, you know, multi-phase scenarios. We were getting 2-3 phases. It was either a kick, a knock-on, or the game was just stop-start. I think it was about 60 minutes that second half. So it was just, it was a hard watch, but it was attritional. There's no doubt about it. And like I say, you know, you win the first test, the pressure is all back on the Springboks now for this Saturday. I think they will respond. You know, they will have fire in the belly and they will come out fighting, but I just don't know if it's in their legs. I'd be really concerned now by what I saw in that second half on Saturday. Let's wait and see.
Yeah, a lot to look forward to. Great stuff, Quinny.
Cheers. Thanks, Nathan.
And don't forget that the Lions' second test against South Africa. Full live commentary here on Off the Ball from 5 o'clock on Saturday. Brian O'Driscoll and Neil Tracy will once again be bringing you through all of that and loads more build-up to come during the week. OTBAM brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. That is us, well, almost done for this morning. We're back tomorrow morning, 7:30. We'll be talking to Kevin Walsh about the fallout from the Connacht final, the latest from the Galway races as well. There is the Olympics. We'll have more on the Lions. And don't forget tonight, 5 o'clock, the Olympic show and the radio from 7 o'clock as well.